Congressman, this is Bob Kincaid. My sincere apologies. For some reason or another, we lost our connection with Mark Levin. I know he did want to ask, and I hope I'm not... my show starts in about 3 minutes, so it's no problem. But I know he did want to move with you briefly to this the political situation in Pennsylvania.
Sure. Absolutely.
And I realize it's probably a rather sensitive area for you. But there are.
I'm happy to address it if there was time, but can we still do it or we won't?
No, we're fine. We're fine.
Right.
There's a lot of talk out there suggesting that you would be an appropriate challenger in the primary for Arlen Specter. Can you address that?
Absolutely. I was disappointed in the Washington political establishment of my party, the Democrats, that they felt they needed to reach over to an individual who'd been in the Republican establishment for about four decades, and then tell us Pennsylvanians, here's your future. I just did not get into politics because I felt that our independent decision-making was going to be taken away by an establishment. So that has moved me more close to getting into this race. But I said, and I will continue to do so, although I haven't been moved away from my concerns, that I will wait to see what Arlen Specter is running for. What is the health care proposal that he believes in? How is he going to fight for the right educational future and opportunity for our children in Pennsylvania? Because they're not staying. And you can see that because Pennsylvania now is up there with Florida as the oldest in average age of the citizens of the state, of the states, of the union. What is he going to do for alternative energy in our environment? And unless those answers are addressed well, and number two, we feel we can rely upon him, not this year only, but in 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16, then I will get into this because I believe that the next few years are so important to my district and to us Pennsylvanians as a whole that we cannot entrust this to someone who we feel we may not be able to rely upon. And number two, has not the right policies for us Pennsylvanians. We're going to decide this. And so that's what I'm working through. Haven't made my final decision yet, but it is something that is too important to let just an establishment, as much as I respect the men who made that decision. And I just feel it isn't theirs. There's no kings and no kingmakers in America. And so we're going to work this through together, us Pennsylvanians.
Well, Congressman, that is, and I am, this is not false praise or lightly given. That is an answer that makes me feel a surge of pride, quite frankly, because it mirrors a lot of what I too have thought. May I also raise a couple of other issues that you didn't touch on within the calculus of whether or not you get into the race?
Sure, absolutely.
The first one.
I'll just have to wrap up maybe within the next five, if it's okay.
That's fine. That's fine. I just know that I know this was very important to Mark and. I don't know what happened to him, but it's...
So we'll make the time.
Yeah, we operate through the miracle of modern technology, and sometimes it bites us. Two issues, one of which, one of the issues that the Horn, the network that you're on right now, is the single most the unwavering voice for working people broadcast-wise in the United States.
Yes.
Senator Specter came out and said that in no wise would he support the Employee Free Choice Act.
Right.
Can you address that topic?
Yes, the Employee Free Choice Act is one that I have co-sponsored. I actually voted for it in the last election, Congress, and it comes out of my committee. The issue is that the National Relations, NRLB, National Relations Labor Board, is broken. And there's not the proper enforcement of the right of workers to unionize. Now, people may agree or disagree on that, but the fact of the matter is they have the right to unionize by law. So what you find is that approximately 60% of those that want to have a secret ballot never get there because there is of groups that try to organize, because in 60% of the cases there are actual firings or pressure placed upon those who are trying to organize by employers. Second is what you have is that after they get to the right, after they won a secret ballot, about 40% of those groups that have voted for union never get to a contract. And so this bill was supposed to make the field much more fair. And so that's the issue here, is that it's not really about labor. It's about working families. And the reason I'm concerned about working families is in my district and all of Pennsylvania, 50% of the families, working families, the median level of the income of our state means that when you look at statistics, they are earning less today in real income than they did in 2001. That's not just today, 2009, after a recession of a year, 14 months. It was even 14 months ago before the recession began that they were losing less and earning less in real terms. With health premiums up 100% in that period of time, the cost of public university education up 60% during that time. And you sit back and say, well, wait a moment. The great American dream that the next generation will have the opportunity, not the requirement, but the promise, but the opportunity to do better than their father and mother hasn't been met. And we need to address this issue, and this is a piece of it. There's so much more to be done, from healthcare to educational opportunity, but this is a piece of the future.
Well, I believe a week and a half ago, I spoke with a wonderful radio host in your state, a gentleman by the name of Rick Smith, out of Harrisburg, and he was talking about the fact that organized labor would effectively have no voice if Arlen Specter were elected Senate. And we had an extended discussion about the fact that working people, working families, as you rightly describe them, very much need advocacy and representation within Pennsylvania Senate delegation. And I'm again proud to hear the way you discuss the issue. Finally, I would merely ask if, because I don't have the data in front of me, and I'll be very quick, Congressman. The Head On Radio Network is headquartered in West Virginia. Where I'm speaking to you from right now is literally 2 miles from the boundaries of a national park and 2 miles from a place where a coal company is currently blowing up a mountain to get at a 16-inch seam of coal. I wanted to inquire, because I don't have the data in front of me, are you signatory to the Clean Water Protection Act, H.R. 1310?
I will find out if I'm signatory to H.R. What was the number?
1310.
1310. Let me quickly see if I have. There's 5,000 bills, and I am co-sponsor of quite a few of them.
I can well imagine.
If I'm not, I probably should be, but I believe that I probably am. Look, what we need to do, and I'm so glad about the economic stimulus bill and about what we're about to do in the president's budget, is that we need to put the research and development to make it an effective way to do sequestration if we are to use coal. And not only that, we cannot continue to devastate by how we do that. Hold on. I'm an original co-sponsor of the bill.
Wonderful. I wanted to check on that, because
we have to take care of the land. Oh, look, and personally, I think this whole approach to energy and the environment is a win-win if done right for business and the environment. When I got endorsed by the Sierra Club in my first election, I asked, where they were standing on my right, I asked on my left if I could have a businessman, which they said certainly, because it was a businessman who was with the firm that had at the time in my district the largest portfolio in America for investment portfolio for clean energy. These are the kinds of jobs that President Obama bodes for the future. And, you know, it's going to take time, but we should not be having Iberdrola, which is a wonderful company, Spanish-owned, establishing headquarters here and building windmills that gives us jobs. Where is our own businessmen and women being given the proper tax incentives that shouldn't be given to the oil companies, that should be given to the clean energy types like we did in the economic stimulus bill, so that they invest in it, and soon America is establishing windmill factories over in China or other places? This can be good for our economy. It can be good for our education, as we have the artisans now switching over to the proper type of nanofabrication for the solar power panels of the future. And it's clean for our energy environment, which means it's good for our children's future. This is a major issue that we need to continue to work on. It's one of the issues where I want to hear where Ireland sits on all this.
And I very much do as well, Joe. And I tell you what, I know you are pressed for time. I would like at some point, if you don't mind, to have a longer, more extended conversation on these topics with you. It has been a real pleasure for me. I'm sorry that we lost Mark in the process, but I really appreciate the time and the energy you've brought to this conversation, and I thank you very, very kindly.
Glad to be aboard again in the future, and have a great evening.
You too, sir. You too. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye now. That is Congressman Joe Sestak from Pennsylvania. I hope you like what you heard both in Mark's conversation and mine. I guess this is a program without an intro. Wait a minute. Let me fix that. Stand by just a second. The podcast is going to be all screwed up, I'm sure, but we'll make sure that it works. But here, let's do this.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop renewal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Okay, so the intro this evening is a little bit awkward. It's 9 minutes past the hour. But that was a very important conversation, and I didn't want it to end just with silence. So I, with some sense of what Mark wanted to finish the conversation on, I took a moment to try to make that work, and I hope that it did. We do have some other technical issues going on right now. We just had one of those end-of-the-world thunderstorms blow through. The sun has come back out, but for a while it was coming in sheets, and I've got a power supply over here that is beeping and demanding attention. It may take the phones out. I may have to go dark for a few minutes, but I will be back, knock on wood, he said, wrapping himself squarely on the top of the noggin. But if it takes us out, it takes us out, but I will be back, so my apologies in advance. Mark Levine is on the line with us just for a quick debrief. Yeah, go ahead and bring him on, Horn Intern Junior Grade Ferg.
Hey, technical problems, but they're part of life.
I despise technical problems, and I despise things going beep in the background while I'm trying to do a daggum broadcast. But yeah.
Yeah, we've got a member of Congress on the air. It's painful.
But you know what?
It's just me talking. I don't really care that much. But
he's a very genial man.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Though he and I had a big fight last year, you may not even remember.
No, I thought that was Bart Sestak.
Maybe it was. Maybe it was. Maybe that's why I said Bart at one point. Oh, you know what? I may have confused the two. That may be the difference.
Are you smoking banana peels on air again, Mark?
Come on. Why would there be two Sestaks in Congress here?
Hey, it's Pennsylvania. In Pennsylvania, Sestak's probably like Smith.
I didn't know that. You know what? I think it was Bart. Because at one point I started to call him Bart, and I stopped myself. You know what? I bet that's the difference. Bart Sestak and I had the fight last year over
contempt.
Whether or not to put Rove in jail.
Via inherent contempt, yes.
Right. But you know what? I just looked up Bart Sestak on Google, and that may not be him. I think it's the same guy. I don't think he remembered, and I wasn't going to bring it up because I wanted to be nice. And
I got to tell you on just about everything he raised and you raised and I raised, he got all the answers right from this liberal's perspective. Now
he's solidly pro labor and pro environmental issues, and he's the one though that it's, and I hope he answered this question while I was in technical hell. He's the one that I hope will challenge Arlen Specter.
Yes, he did. He is looking very seriously at that. And he did what a thoughtful politician would do. And I don't use politician like a dirty word in this sense.
He dodged the question.
No, he did not dodge the question.
No?
He said, I am going to see what Arlen does. I'm going
That's a good answer.
He said, I'm going to see if Arlen stands up for working people. I'm going to see if Arlen actually does what's needed to keep young Pennsylvanians in Pennsylvania. I'm going to see if Arlen does the right thing on health care.
Well, that actually makes sense, because that way when he announces that he's running, he can say Arlen didn't do the right thing. That's actually a very good move. It's a very good move on his part.
I'm very pleased with him. He is, in fact, an original co-sponsor of the Clean Water Protection Act, H.R. 1310, which would effectively end mountain removal, not just in West Virginia, but in all of Appalachia.
Good for him.
He is endorsed by the Sierra Club.
I'm glad to hear it. It was Joe Sestak. I just did my research on my own website. This was the guy I disagreed with on that. But that's okay. Like I, you know, if I agree with every member of, well, I don't, there's no member of Congress I agree with all the time. I thought he was wrong on not pressing the contempt issue. But it is, I've never doubted that he's an intelligent man, that he's a Democrat, that he's someone who I agree with most of the time. And one thing I did like is that he had a very clear understanding of Pakistan that I think, honestly, very few do have.
And you know what? No one is more vociferous, Mark, in wanting us the hell out of that region. Anybody who thinks that you can conquer or pacify Afghanistan, Pakistan, the tribal areas, has clearly never read a blessed word about Alexander the Great. Because we ain't got no Alexanders in the Pentagon. Not a one. Not even close, okay? We don't even have Alexander's horse, Bucephalus, Oxhead. We ain't got him. We can't do it. It can't be done. But the place can be, if we go about it the right way, and it's some of what I heard him talking about, it can be rendered harmless.
Which is all we want. Which it should be all we want. I mean, that's the only thing that we have a right to want.
Yeah, see, I don't want Afghanistan to be the 51st star in the flag.
No, I just want it not to harbor people that come to us with planes and
but as long as we're zooming through the skies, putting hellfire missiles on top of wedding parties, you know, that's the thing I never understand about the right wing, Mark. They're all about, well, we got to protect the sanctity of marriage. Well, as long as it's not happening in Afghanistan where we're putting missiles on them, because they're hypocrites, the right wing. But
really?
Yeah. Not,
you feel that way, Bob?
Yeah. Just in.
Because I've never heard you say that before. So okay, if you think so.
But anyway, there are ways to make Afghanistan and the tribal areas of Pakistan and Pakistan in general stable. But it doesn't. It generally does not happen well with the fumes of cordite wafting through the air.
Which is why I brought up two issues. One was developmental aid. Education and giving people a chance and opportunity, jobs, the same kinds of opportunities, you know, as I talked about the fact that they're actually paid more to work for the Taliban than they are to work for the Pakistani police and army, and also that half the kids are getting educated. And the other thing is sensitivity to ethnic differences, which he complimented me for raising the question because apparently no one asked him that question. But one of the things that we never seem to understand in Vietnam, for example, is it wasn't that the South Vietnamese and North Vietnamese wanted to be communist. They didn't really care. They just wanted we, the imperialists, out of there. It was respecting their own local issues. I don't think that the people of Waziristan are really that into the Taliban or really that into Al-Qaeda or, frankly, even that into Sharia law and the mistreatment of women under it. What they want is their Pashtun. It's a different ethnic group from the Punjab. They want a little bit of autonomy. And I think that once we start recognizing people's rights to autonomy, you don't have to give them a separate state, but simply the right to teach their own language in their own schools and practice their own traditions. I said this about the Kurds of Iraq. I said it about really any minority, the Basques. Let that minority teach their own religion and their own culture, and usually they won't be pushing for their own state. So I was glad that he saw the ethnic issue as well.
As am I. And for some reason, I have lost... Well, at some point, I'm beeping. I'm going to have to do a reboot at some point.
All right, I'm going to hang up then, and glad you enjoyed the interview. I'm always glad when I get members of Congress on the air, particularly an intelligent one like him. And I suspect, if I had to bet, that our inspector will try to go a bit to the left. He won't succeed in going far enough, And this man may be the next senator from Pennsylvania.
Well, if our fellow horn host Rick Smith understands, and he's from Pennsylvania, so he should know, that there is no way. I mean, unless Arlen Specter began behaving like that magic bullet that he invented. Arlen Specter can't get whatever half measure he does to try to engage in appeasement of the so-called left. It's going to be a half measure, and it is going to be insufficient. I'm guessing that if Congressman Sestak continues to speak the way he spoke today, that there is a strong likelihood that organized labor would get behind him. I can't speak for labor, but
No. I think they're already behind him. The question is what? By the way, it's Bart Stupak. That's why I was confused.
Okay,
it's
yeah,
Bart Stupak,
right.
Not a Bart Sestak. Sorry about that. But no, I think that at the end of the day, Arlen Specter will try to do a face-saving move, much like the governor of New Hampshire did. And if it's a truly fig leaf, like I think the governor of New Hampshire, it's a complete fig leaf. It doesn't affect anything. It just delays everything. But it's going to happen in New Hampshire. I'm okay with it. If Arlen Specter says, all right, we're going to have the Employee Free Choice Act, but we're going to call it the Employee Free Choice Law, and they can put the cards in, but they have to be signed by a notary, you know, something ridiculous like that. But if it does the intent of the bill, which is to allow the majority of people to unionize when they want to, then you'll hear me talking good about Arlen Specter. We'll see.
Well, but I'll tell you what. I mean, I know you're more of a gambling man than I am. I'll lay odds that that ain't going to happen. What will happen?
I'm not going to bet you on that because I think you're right. It's not going to happen.
What would happen?
Is the opportunity to
as far as EFCA is concerned, Mark. What will happen is that Arlen might weasel a little bit to the center because ain't nothing about him middle of the road or moderate or liberal or any of that garbage that's been applied to him. What he will do is I would predict that he'll say, you know, that lady from Arkansas, that Blanche Lincoln, the one that represents Walmart, I'm with her. Because what they've tried to do is put together this watered down version of EFCA that takes the 50% card check requirement and runs it up to like 70%, something like that.
No, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and they're calling it, well, you know, that's a moderate compromise.
Yeah, no, it's not.
No, that's a shiv through the ribs.
The other thing that Specter could do is he could say, and this would be fine with me, he could say, I'm going to vote against the Employee Free Choice Act, but I won't filibuster it. And you know what? If he does that, it'll pass, and I'm okay with that. If he's not part of the 60, so he allows it to get to the floor, and then the majority votes it without Blanche Lincoln and without Arlen Specter, that's a face-saving move.
That's
okay
the thing there. There ain't no 60, okay? Because Blanche Lincoln is a Democrat. David Pryor is a Democrat. Ben Nelson has already announced his opposition to it. Mary Landrieu can't be counted on.
You know what?
Yeah, and what we're talking about here is an overarching problem with no one so much as Harry Reid, Mark.
Oh, I can't blame Harry Reid for Mary Landrieu and
I can. He's the majority leader. You go to him and you say, you know that bridge you want built in your hometown? It ain't getting built. That's how hard, you know, you were praising LBJ yesterday. That's
right.
How he operated. He was,
that's
after
true.
All,
that
unless I am
LBJ
mistaken,
operated.
Was he not majority leader or majority whip in the Senate at one point?
Yes, but we haven't had a politician like LBJ since LBJ.
Well, guess what? The evidence, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence.
Harry Reid is no LBJ. We could definitely agree.
Well, you know, the fact that, I mean, I was particularly dismayed, and I don't know if you saw this or not, Mark. You know, there's ongoing, you know, Jay Bybee, Office of Legal Counsel, right? The guy
former,
who's...
Former.
Yeah, but the guy who's now a federal appeals court judge who sat around in his office... nibbling cheese doodles and writing about torturing human beings.
Right.
His appointment to the Office of Legal Counsel was approved on nothing more than a voice vote in 2001.
Right, and now they're trying to stop Don Johnson.
Don Johnson, Harry Reid said yesterday, is going to have 60 votes because the Republicans won't let him otherwise.
Do you know what? She'll have 60 votes. I mean, it's not the right thing for them to filibuster her, but she'll have 60 votes.
She won't have 60 votes. She ain't got Ben Nelson. That's the whole point here, Mark. Harry Reid does not have control of his own caucus.
That's true, but that's normal. I actually think she's going to get it because I think both of the senators from Maine will vote for her to absolutely. I don't see either Olympia Snowe or Susan Collins turning on Don Johnson. She's not at all a radical. She's a very well-respected legal scholar. I think it's going to happen. Let me just say this, because I know you have to reboot, and then I'm going to get out of here. I do think the only option on the Employee Free Choice Act that helps save face of Blanche Lincoln and Mary Landrieu and Ben Nelson and Arlen Specter is for them to vote for cloture, vote for it to be heard. After all, just vote for a vote.
All we
and then all of them can vote against it, because you know what? We have 50 votes. We don't have 60, but we have 50.
That is true.
That is the only face-saving solution. And you know what? If Harry Reid does that, I'm okay with it.
And you know what? In the process, the best way to handle that is to just play videotape over and over and audio sound bites over and over of Bill the Cat Killer Frist repeating in that simpering accent of his on the floor of the United States Senate, all we want is a up or down vote.
Exactly. Put in the reconciliation bill. Then you get an up or down vote. There are other ways to skin this cat.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you for finishing the interview. I'm sorry to hear about your sheets of rain, and I wish we had a way to prevent technical problems, but given that they happen...
Well, there is a way to prevent technical problems in large part. It's called money.
Well, go into your pitch then and get our listeners to help you out.
Indeed, I'm going to try. Mark, we'll talk to you later, brother.
Thank you, Bob.
Bye now. Mark Levine, host of the Inside Scoop, which I finished there. Sorry about that, Lottie. I know. I can't say Bill Frist around a cat without the cat going, hair! You know, and hairball. With good reason. Let's see. Is somebody on this line? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey. Brother Bob.
Brother Albert. Yeah, what's up, man?
Well, I just got to say real quick, I think it's time for Democrats to show some of the integrity that we kind of demand in our daily lives. And now that we know that Nancy Pelosi knew about all those little fun techniques, and now she's admitting that weapons of mass destruction were lied about and all this other beautiful stuff that we've had to endure for those 8 years of terror. I would like to see perhaps something along the lines of, maybe her stepping down voluntarily and going for some sort of hearings and investigations and maybe impeachment trials and this and that, you know, just say, hey, you know, I lied to and due to that I made mistakes and due to that I'm stepping down, let somebody else kind of take over, you know, and, you know, maybe admit a little humility and, you know, kind of do the right thing. And I think in a way, you know, just because I'm not a big fan of her or nothing, even though she's much better than some of the others. But at the same time, I would like to kind of see her step up, have a little integrity, do what needs to get done, and pay the bills that need to get paid. You know, I mean, you knew about this. You knew about it. You knew about it. End of story. You knew about it. You're done.
And
just sit down.
See, and that's because, now this is coming from the Bob Kincaid realist moment.
I know.
You come out and you do that Captain Renault scene from Casablanca where you say, I am shocked to find out that the intelligence community lied to me.
Sir, here are your
words. You know, there's, have you seen, have you seen Charlie Wilson's War? You know the scene where the CIA guy, as played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, has brought Tom Hanks the bottle of good scotch, and he steps out of the room while the crisis is unfolding, and then he walks back in and says, don't forget to subpoena the limo driver. And he says, were you listening at the door? That's thick wood. How'd you? No, 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 sir. We bugged your bottle of scotch. It's the freaking CIA. It's the intelligence community. The truth ain't in them by definition. We hire them to be untruthful, and then we stand there with our little arms akimbo and our mouths agape, and they lied to me. They did. They and they lied to the Congress. Oh, my God, they lied. They misled. See, because she doesn't even have the guts to say they lied. Did you hear the clip?
Which clip?
Of Nancy Pelosi with the news conference thing.
I read it. I didn't actually hear. I'm sure it's probably.
The guy asking the question, she said, it is apparent to me that they misled the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you mean they lied? I mean they misled the Congress.
How do you mislead?
Well, see, that's because she, there's this thing that happens to the English language when you cross the Potomac River where you can't use the words that fit no more. You can't say that there's a lying sack of then the truth ain't in them, and you can't say they misled. No, by God, Nancy, if what you're saying is the truth, if you're not, and here's that word again, lying to us, then they lied to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're misleading us with all deliberate speed, and you know.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, well, you fomented it in my mind. I mean, we sit there and look at just utter nonsense that, you know, you can't sit there and, you know, literally be a human being and know words and use them in a way that says the opposite of what you really mean. And, you know, but at the same time, it sounds like they're trying to come down on the good side. The misled is what... How do you mislead? I mean, like, misled is something you almost equate it with.
No, damn it. Misdirection, Albert, is when you fake the off-tackle dive play and you pitch to the tailback going left. That's misleading.
Yeah, you know, misleading me, you know, I didn't know there was a surprise party. I didn't know you guys misled me on that one. You know, but when you talk about, you know, putting people under, you know, a couple gallons of water and beating the hell out of them and, you know, beating, you know, then making up memos to go snip snip to their children in front of them and all the other horrible things that were coming out of these perverse minds, that's not mislead. I mean, you know, come on now. I mean, are we adults here? I mean, you know, it's like mislead. And because of that, I think we need to continue with that. I think we called for a long time ago. We have to demand real change here. I mean, we can't continue this crap with these people that just will. They lied. You know, you giving Joe Scarborough. Well, why do you got to give Joe Scarborough this, you know, path of least resistance to say, you know, that old, well, the CIA and the FBI don't get along, you know, kind of stuff. You know, that's his big argument. You know, like, oh, they don't get along, so, you know, obviously it's, you know, obviously they don't get along, so obviously the FBI is just trying to make the CIA look bad. And we're arguing about, you know, brass tacks and Titanic here, and it's like, I don't know. Someone's got to save the integrity of, you know, at least one political party in this country, if not two. You know, the Republicans are gone, and, you know, now we need to foment whatever opposition to the Democratic Party, because you can't let anybody be Mussolini. I don't care how much the train's going to fly. I don't care about solar panels on my roof. You know, we can't ever let anybody get that much power, ever. I don't care who it is. You know, you can't let, if Jesus walked out of the clouds, we couldn't give him that much power. You know, so, you know, I think these things are important. You know, when we hear Nancy Pelosi, well, Nancy, please step down. Let somebody else, Harry Reid, you knew too, step down. It's time. I mean, you know, they may think, you know, and that's the other thing, they're taking credit for our anger or our outrage when in reality, you know, not for nothing, during those 8 years or so, their flavor was in that, I won't say the word, but that shake. That milkshake, so to speak, that we were being waterboarded with constantly. you know, that milkshake of fear. They were right there. You know, they were on the, they were right there on the tip of the palate. And, you know, I still taste it. And, you know, every time I see this, it comes.
Yeah, and it's got the, it's got that sort of ferrous sting of the taste of blood, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's got that, yeah, no doubt. And there's a hint of sulfur in there, too. And, you know, we really got to, you know, heck, I want to see some Dennis Kucinich in charge of something. I want to see him in, you know, Speaker of the House or something like that. I want to see some people that, you know, really kind of, that honestly have never abandoned us, you know, that have never, you know, that don't sit there and that will call a liar, that will sit there and read off, you know, 600 articles of impeachment, you know, for 3 days with no break, you know, maybe a pee break here and there. You know, I want to see somebody that really is a leader. I mean, and these people aren't leaders. They're just deal makers, you know, and, you know, I mean, and they blame these, you know, these entities that are there forever. You know, it's like that guy I told you about, and I keep talking about him. I mean, he was the pet Republican for a while, and he just lost his mind and became real freakish and flew his freak flag. But, you know, before that, you know, he apparently joined the military just so Rush Limbaugh could, you know, call him a hero and stuff and get him all excited. But, you know, now he's abandoned it because they're going back to Iraq. So, you know, he, like a coward, he runs off and, you know, he thinks he escaped from it. You know, but see, the thing about the military is it's not personal. And the thing about the FBI, like these things are, yeah, they might have their little grudges in the Marines or the Navy and da-da-da-da-da and the FBI versus CIA. But in reality, you know, yeah, some people are lifers and they'll do 20 years, especially in the FBI when you're talking like that. But, you know, you're talking about any of these other things, you know, the military doesn't care. They're not going to come looking for you if you go be, if you desert or be in abandonment. You know, as long as you don't go and kill anybody or steal anything, they're not going to come looking for you. If you just leave and you're AWOL, they'll just wait because where are you going to go? Eventually you'll turn up. And, you know, and it's when we're looking at a system that's so just, you know, it just runs on its own. It's like slime mold, you know. I mean, eventually it's going to get you. You know, we sit here and we talk about the FBI and we lay blame to these, you know, to these amorphous just blobs of, you know, alphabetical soup. And, you know, we put the blame on them, but then there's really no accountability. You know, I mean, you can't just blame one guy or two guys or three guys. This stuff is systemic. You know, I mean, we got like, you know, wilt rot in from root to tip. You know, it's time to cut the tree down, and I know, but get some seed, you know, get some nematodes and kill off some of the pathogens, and, you know, let's start all over and, you know, build it right this time. You know, I was just looking at one of those, my mother brought me some National Geographic things, and she was, you know, there, of course, it was, you know, the awesome power of nature destroying everything and blah, 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 and they were showing these earthquake fault lines, and it was just amazing to me, and it just, you know, it just brings it all over again. And there's some things that, you know, we used to do back in the day correctly. When, like, when they used to build a building, you know, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, they used to build it correct. Because when you have an earthquake now of 7.2 magnitude for 45 seconds in Turkey, every new building is completely demolished into a pile of, you know, socks. And these mosques that were built, you know, whew, you know, so long ago, they're still standing
there.
Like,
yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, it just makes me, you know, it just makes me
look,
cringe.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, here's an even better example. That big pile of rocks on top of the Acropolis in Athens.
Mm-hmm.
That thing withstood the test of just about everything short of Christianity. and then it was still in pretty decent shape. Until, what was it, the 15th century, 14th century, war between the unending war between, you know, it's just a manifestation, a further manifestation of the Iliad, war between the Turks and the Greeks. They were using the Parthenon for, an ammo dump. And it all went up.
Mm-hmm.
And even that didn't take it down. Okay? And now it looks, you know, it sort of ruined it for, ruined some of the aesthetics of it, but it didn't take it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there are building practices and there are building practices. Another earthquake prone region, the Valley of Mexico. You'll note that it's a little the worse for wear. But the Pyramid of the Sun has been standing for, what, 2,000 years? Broad base, narrow at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Just works. Yeah. Same, the Copan, Palenque, Chichen Itza, they're all still standing. Now, the mud huts, not so much.
Mm-hmm. Well, true. But, you know, I mean, and this goes right into what we're talking about when we talk about a washing machine that lasts 5 years. You know, I mean, like, man, I don't know about you, but it makes sense to build a building that's going to be around for 1,000 years, that's going to be able to withstand any kind of, you know, because you can't really predict an earthquake. It's just all of a sudden, bam, it's there. And, you know, but you can prepare for it. You know, so if we're prepared for the, I mean, and then that goes on to the whole everything. I mean, you know, it just goes into our entire mindset. It's like, you know, if we don't prepare for the events that can, you know, occur and do complete damage, if we don't occur to damage, you know, like, if we don't sit there and do Geneva Conventions, we would have been, you know, God knows when Reagan got his little way and everybody else like that, and they were doing their torture by proxy with the School of the Americas and all that other stuff. But, you know, I mean, God, it could have been much worse. We could be doing this stuff in every American city and, you know, in every precinct of every jail. And, you know, even though it doesn't work, you know, they could still, but that's why I think, in a way, you know, humanity has our Hitlers and our Stalins and our George Bushes, because it shows us where not to go. Like, it shows us how not to do things. It's like, you know, we build a 10-story building out of particle board and, you know, tongue depressors, and we wonder why it collapses and we lose, you know, 2,000 people in a building. You know, I mean, we got to build these things correctly. We got to build these things to withstand the test of time and nature and everything else like that. And, you know, and I mean, being sustainable is the way to do it. I mean, I don't know if you call it. I put a documentary up on the forum, and it's called The Coconut Revolution or The Coconut Rebellion. And it's about the people of, there's an island near Papua New Guinea, and it's called Bourgainesville. And they had, it had the South Pacific's version of mountaintop removal going on in their country, in their land. And these people lived off the land, and they sat there and looked at what was happening, and they removed a mountain, and it's now a big hole. They ruined the water and everything else like that, and they went ape excrement and started a war.
You can say bananas because it's the same thing, yes.
Ape bananas, eventually it is. You know, they went ape bananas and, like, literally fought their independence. And, you know, these people live up in the bush, and they have, you know, hydropower, and, you know, yeah, they use the parts of all the mine, you know, and they have axles driving. I mean, it's amazing. You watch, check that out. It'll bring a smile to your face. These people sitting there saying, you know what, if we don't have our land, if we don't have these things, yeah, there's a little religious, you know, overtones and stuff like that to it, but, you know, there's, you know, just like with anything, man, there's good parts of religion, and there's, you know, not so good parts of religion. And there's another documentary I was watching, it was at one of those Horizons on BBC, which is really excellent. Anybody, you guys see those online on YouTube or Google Video, it's a Horizon, check it out, 45 minutes of time well spent, usually. And they were doing an expose on these mosques in England, and how they're getting all this, you know, really radical extremist Wahhabism to come in and, you know, sit there and talk, you know, talk basically Christian dominionist stuff. You know, and the amazing thing to me is like, you know, they show this to present an extreme face of Islam. But what makes me laugh is all I see is it just ties up the package of all the three into a tighter bun, you know, because we can find at any time, in 5 seconds in America, you can find anybody just as radical, if not more so, in a Christian faith or a Christian denomination or even a Jewish faith as you would find in any of these, you know, these people that talk, you know, infidels.
And yeah, primarily, and that's very true, Albert, especially in regard to the monotheist religions.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be more toxic inside the monotheistic religions than it is inside animistic religions, although that's not to say that, look at the civil unrest that happened in India at the time of its independence. Hindus killing Muslims, Muslims killing Hindus, Muslims saying they started it, Hindus saying they started it, kill. Even the Jainists have gotten into the act in the last year or so. You know what Jain is, right?
The
Jainist, Jain. This is one of the faiths, and you know, these are people who won't, you know, if the mosquito lands and it's biting your arm, they won't slap the mosquito.
Mm-hmm.
and they've got dietary rules, and they're very vegetarian, and then they've gotten into the act because they've decided that there were restaurants that were selling cooked meat too near to their temple, so they went and burned it down. You know, these are, you know, life reverers. You know, it was a restaurant. There were rats. There were bugs, okay? And you killed them. You burned it down. And you're a Jainist, and you won't swat a mosquito.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Extremist is extremist. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter where it is. And I think, yeah, if humanity can do the big deal and stand up, maybe we can shake some of these pests off. Or at least, you know, regulate them to the dirt where they kind of need to be.
And yeah, that's why I see, you know, if I see some guy with a big long beard and talking about how, you know, he needs to whip his wife and stuff like that,
yes.
I have to check first to see whether he's a Muslim, a Jew, or a Christian. Because because there are sects of all of them that go, well, hell yeah, beat the woman. That's how, it's the only way you can keep them in control is give them a good whooping.
Yep, those are the same group of guys that want to, you know, stone the gay people, and, you know, they were.
Remember the little girl that got kidnapped in Utah?
Yep.
And had to walk around in a sheet for a year and was finally, like, you know, brought back to civilization, I forget how. Remember what those people looked like?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and they were radical, crazy-ass Mormons. But to look at them, you couldn't tell them from a radical, crazy-ass Muslim or a radical, crazy-ass Jew.
Yep.
And it's not about Mormons, Muslims, Christians, or Jews. It's about the crazy-ass part.
Yeah, it's true. And I don't know. I mean, it's this totalitarianism, you know. And, you know, I mean, I'd like to think that in the realm of humanity, of life, that there is a place, and there probably is. There's a place for being totalitarian, and you know, and I mean, you know, totalitarian, and when it comes to clean water, and it comes to, you know, like, I mean, there's,
or maybe the word you're looking for is intolerant.
Exactly. All right, intolerant, or you know,
I confess to being wholly intolerant of Don Blankenship.
Absolutely.
You know, I am entirely intolerant of the CEO of Peabody Energy. The beeping is getting worse and worse. I fear we're going to have to forestall this conversation, and I'm going to have to do that reboot, Albert.
Oh, well, sir, you got to get done when you got to get done, brother.
All right, we'll talk soon. Maybe holler back here in a few, okay?
All right. I'll let some others get their turns and stuff like that.
All right, later, brother.
All right, we got time. All right, brother. Later.
Bye. You hear that? That's really annoying to try to do radio during. But I'm going to lose the power to something in a minute, so I got to stop and reboot this thing. Which probably means the phones will go down. And this is just intolerable. So, you know, bear with me for a minute or so. We'll go silent for a couple of minutes. Stand by, please. Sorry for the inconvenience. Now, where in the heck was I? I hope you haven't all gone away. Never a dull, flippin' moment. But everything is fixed. The phones work. It's 5 minutes before the hour. We have managed to get through the first hour of the program, some of which did not involve having a program. But, you know, welcome to the realities of Bricks Without Straw Radio. These things happen. But anyway, I hope you haven't all run away. I told you I'd be back, and I promised that I would be back, and I am back. I'm back at just in time to take our top of the hour break. But before we do that, it seems unfair just to do that and go to a break, and you know, because that sort of sucks. It strikes me that a couple of comments are called for. Imagine that, me, with a couple of comments. But they are. And they go hand in hand with what Albert and I were discussing a few minutes ago. This business of the difference between misleading and lying. Now, just to put everything on an even keel and clarify, I know Mark Levine played the audio already, but it bears going over again. Listen very carefully to the words of Nancy Pelosi. He said, hoping the damn computer will work, which ain't. Oh, well, I give up. I'm licked. I'll read it. We'll do it live! We'll do it live! Even thing sucks! I just love doing that every now and then. Yeah, I gotta give it to Bill O'Reilly. It does feel good to just sort of let it all hang out and like that once in a while, even if there's no falafel involved. The relevant clip is the following. Nancy Pelosi says, "So on the subject of what's happening in Iraq, when it's talking about the techniques used by the intelligence community on those they're interrogating, at every step of the way, the administration was misleading the Congress, and that is the issue, and that is why we need a truth commission to look into the issue." Reporter, "So, Madam Speaker, just to be clear, you're accusing the CIA of lying to you in September of 2002? "Yes, misleading the Congress of the United States." Language, language, language. You know me, I have this frustrating romance with language. On many occasions, it just flat out lets me down. On others, it breaks my heart. Sometimes, however, you get it right. Sometimes it is not. Sometimes it is the handmaiden of truth. In this case, when you can't call a liar, I mean, Jesus, Nancy! It's the Bush administration! They lied! Hey, is your name Georgia? No, it's Hiram McGillicuddy. See, I'm the president, and if the president does it, it's not illegal. That's why I just said I'm Hiram McGillicuddy and not George Bush. It's called lying. Misleading, you know, Mark Twain said, weak writing gives me the fantods. So does weak language. They're liars, Nancy. We knew they were liars. All those years that you were sitting up there prim and proper and saying, impeachment is off the table. Even though you knew you had been lied to, and you still didn't have enough guts not only to stand up for the American people, but not even enough guts to stand up for yourself, woman! Damn! That's just shameful. That's pathetic. It's pitiful. And then the punkin' face John Boehner stood up when she was done and had him a little old press conference. And Punkin' Head John, he said the following. "It's hard for me to imagine that anyone in our intelligence area would ever mislead a member of Congress. This is one of those language moments." Pay careful attention. "It's hard for me to imagine that anyone in our intelligence area would ever mislead a member of Congress." Well, Dr. Freud, courtesy phone. Dr. Freud, courtesy phone. "It's hard for you to imagine that, John, because you don't have to imagine. You're John Boehner, not John Lennon, okay? You don't have to imagine John Boehner because you know. Granted, you're a member of that weird little concentrated cancerous knot of the diehard unreconstructed old Confederates. And there's bigotry running through you like the Mississippi River running. "It's hard for me to imagine." You don't have to imagine, John. "It's hard for you to imagine that they lie because that means that you know that they do. You can't imagine that they lie. You can't imagine that they lie because what they were doing, you get off on, you sick orange-faced freak. You get off on torture. You get all tingly when you see some Arab getting what's coming to him, don't you, John? Yeah, you do, baby. I can't imagine. It's hard for me to imagine that anyone in our intelligence area would ever mislead a member of Congress. Well, don't imagine, John. Go to the congressional record. Read the number of repig-licking bastards who have taken an oath before God and the Republic and sat there and lied. Read the testimony of Oliver North. Read the words of John Negroponte in the Iran-Contra investigation. Read, John! Read the words of Robert Haldeman and John Ehrlichman. Read, John! Then you won't have to imagine. You will know. It's all language. Language that has moved us for as long as we have had the facilities of speech. It even reaches across your ability to comprehend the words themselves. Witness this.
Menin aedeta, peleiadio achilleos, ulomenein, hei myria kaiois alge etheken, polas defimus psiukas aidi proiapsen hei roon, autus de heloria teuke cunesin, oeonoisi te daita, dios de teleoto bulle, ex hude ta prota dias de tein risante, atre ides devanax andron, kai dios Achilleus.
Sing, O goddess, the anger of Achilles, son of Peleus, that brought countless ills upon the Achaeans. Many a brave soul did it send hurrying down to Hades, and many a hero did it yield a prey to dogs and vultures, for so were the counsels of Jove filled from the day on which the son of Atreus, king of men, and great Achilles first fell out with one another. And which of the gods was it that set them on quarrel? It was the son of Jove and Leto, for he was angry with the king and sent a pestilence upon the host to plague the people, because the son of Atreus had dishonored Chryses, his priest. Now Chryses had come to the ships of the Achaeans to free his daughter, and had brought with him a great ransom. Moreover, he bore in his hand the scepter of Apollo, wreathed with a suppliant's wreath, and he besought the Achaeans, but most of all the two sons of Atreus, who were their chiefs. Sons of Atreus, he cried, and all other Achaeans, may the gods who dwell in Olympus grant you to sack the city of Priam and to reach your homes in safety, but free my daughter and accept a ransom for her in reverence to Apollo, son of Jove. The Greek and then the English of the opening of the Iliad. A story which has been told, for all we know, around fires and feasting halls, midst cups of flowing wine and flowing mead, for more than three millennia. And it holds meaning still, and even in hearing that beautiful chanted ancient language that so few of us speak, still we hear the magic words, the names. We hear Peleus, Atreus, Achilles. And we know. We know all the way to the bone what's going to happen, because it is the magic of remembered human speech. And so it is that when a dog like Pumpkinhead John Boner lays lies before us in the guise of surprised words and uncomprehending challenge to the idea that some vicious killer would lie before Congress, a Congress that was at the time rendered toothless and powerless and had no desire to challenge the authority of the executive branch. So it is that John Boner, who was complicit in that lying, who smirked quietly to himself as the lies were told of torture and rape, murder and mayhem, so it is that now he stands before a microphone and says, "I cannot imagine. I cannot imagine. It's hard for me to imagine that anyone in our intelligence area would ever mislead a member of Congress. They come to the Hill to brief us because they're required to under the law. And I don't know what motivation they would have to mislead anyone. And I don't believe and don't feel that in the briefings I've had that I've been misled at any one point in time." Those words ain't nothing but pure trouble. All that believing and all that feeling. Because, John Boner, you yourself know that you would be misleading the people of the United States. You would, in a word, be lying to the people of the United States were you to stand before them with the cameras powered and the satellite uplinks twittering their microwaves between Earth and space. You would be lying if you said instead, "I don't know that in the briefings I've had that I've been misled at any one point in time." Instead, you have to use the vile cloak of the religious code words and say believe and feel. Because you know and you do think. And you are complicit in heinous, vile war crimes. John Boner, Pumpkin Face. You are complicit. You are now and you were then an enabler of the most reprehensible besmirching of the character of this once great republic. And you, sir, disgust me. Just a few more words. Just a few.
Vai da de moi lusai te pilein, tata poina de kestai, adzam noi dios vion, e ke bolona poluna. Men taloi men pantes aperte misana caioi, ai desai tiarea, tai adla adectai apoina. A luca tri idee agamemnoni hendane tumo, ala cacos apie, crateron de pimuton etelen. Me segeron coi lisene go para nelsi ciceo, e nunde tu non te huisteran autis ionta, me nuto iu crais me sceptron cais temate hoio. Tien dego ulluso, prin min cae geras e pesin, e metero en ioico en argei te loti patres, histon e poi camenein, cae mon lecos antia usan. Al iti, me neretidze, sa hoteras hosce ne eai. Vosa fate, en desen, dogoron, cae apetato muthol. Me daceon paratina polu plois voi iota lasses. Pola de peta panelte cion, erat fogeraios a polonia natti, toneu comos tegeleto. Pluti meo agrotox hos crisein ampi bebecas, cilan te zate ein, tenedoio te ifia nasses, sminteo.
The old man feared him and obeyed. Not a word he spoke, but went by the shore of the sounding sea and prayed apart to King Apollo, whom lovely Leto had borne. "Hear me," he cried, "O god of the silver bow that protectest Chryse and holy Scylla, and rulest Tenedos with thy might. Hear me, O thou of Sminthe. I have ever decked your temple with garlands, or burned your thigh bones in fat of bulls or goats. Grant my prayer, and let your arrows avenge these my tears upon the Danaans." Thus did he pray, and Apollo heard his prayer. He came down furious from the summits of Olympus, with his bow and his quiver upon his shoulder, and the arrows rattled on his back with the rage that trembled within him. He sat himself down away from the ships with a face as dark as night, and his silver bow rang death as he shot his arrow in the midst of them. First he smote their mules and their hounds, but presently he aimed his shafts at the people themselves, and all day long the pyres of the dead were burning. For 9 whole days he shot his arrows among the people, but upon the 10th day Achilles called them in assembly, moved thereto by Juno, who saw the Achaeans in their death throes, and had compassion upon them. Then when they were got together, he rose and spoke among them. "Son of Atreus," he said, "I deem that we should now turn roving home if we would escape destruction, for we are being cut down by war and pestilence at once. Let us ask some priest or prophet or some reader of dreams, for dreams too are of Jove, who can tell us why Phoebus Apollo is so angry, and say whether it is for some vow that we have broken, or a hecatomb that we have not offered, or whether he will accept the savor of lambs and goats without blemish, so as to take away the plague from us." With these words he sat down, and Calchas, son of Thestor, wisest of augurs, who knew things past and present and to come, rose to speak. He it was who had guided the Achaeans with their fleet to Ilius, through the prophesyings with which Phoebus Apollo had inspired him. With all sincerity and goodwill he addressed them. "Achilles, loved of heaven, you bid me tell you about the anger of King Apollo. I will therefore do so, but consider first and swear that you will stand by me heartily in word and deed, for I know that I shall offend one who rules the Argives with might, to whom all the Achaeans are in subjection. A plain man cannot stand against the anger of a king, who, if he swallow his displeasure now, will yet nurse revenge till he has wreaked it. Consider, therefore, whether or not you will protect me." And Achilles answered, "Fear not, but speak as it is borne upon you from heaven, for by Apollo, Calchas, to whom you pray, and whose oracles you reveal to us, not a Danaan at our ships shall lay his hand upon you, while I yet live to look upon the face of the earth. No, not though you name Agamemnon himself, who is by far the foremost of the Achaeans." Thereon the seer spoke boldly. "The god," he said, "is angry neither about vow nor hecatomb, but for his priest's sake, whom Agamemnon has dishonored, in that he would not free his daughter, nor take a ransom for her. Therefore he has sent these evils upon us, and will yet send others. He will not deliver the Danaans from this pestilence till Agamemnon has restored the girl without fee or ransom to her father, and has sent a holy hecatomb to Chryse. Thus we may, perhaps, appease them." With these words he sat down, and Agamemnon rose in anger. His heart was black with rage, and his eyes flashed fire as he scowled on Calchas and said, "Seer of evil, you never yet prophesied smooth things concerning me, but have ever loved to foretell that which was evil. You have brought me neither comfort nor performance, and now you come seeing among Danaans and saying that Apollo has plagued us because I would not take a ransom for this girl, the daughter of Chryses. I have set my heart on keeping her in my own house, for I love her better than even my own wife Clytemnestra, whose peer she is alike in form and feature, in understanding and accomplishments. Still, I will give her up if I must, for I would have the people live, not die. But you must find me a prize instead, or I alone among the Argives shall be without one. This is not well, for you behold, all of you, that my prize is to go elsewhither." And Achilles answered, "Most noble son of Atreus, covetous beyond all mankind, how shall the Achaeans find you another prize? We have no common store from which to take one. Those we took from the cities have been awarded. We cannot disallow the awards that have been made already. Give this girl, therefore, to the god, and if ever Jove grants us to sack the city of Troy, we will repute you 3 and 4-fold. It's a hell of a story, the Iliad. Even without Brad Pitt in a short skirt, it's a hell of a story. And it has relevance, yea, verily, to this day. for it is the pride of fools. Fools named Boner, and fools named Bush, and fools named Bibee, and fools named Rumsfeld, and fools named Wolfowitz, and Cheney, and Rice, and Powell, that have landed our people on the shores of a distant country from which we cannot return, and which daily bleeds us of our greatest treasure. Our youth, and second most our honor. And caught in the web of their own lies, like Agamemnon standing up in indignation, knowing he is stone cold busted, John Punkinface Boner says, it's hard for me to imagine that anyone in our intelligence area would ever mislead a member of Congress. Go to hell, John Boner! It waits for you. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the Horn. This is Activist Radio.
I lie. Why? Because I can. It's the pleasure and the privilege of the richest people in the land. Don't you understand? I don't. I don't give a damn for you. I don't give a damn for you. That's the truth. I lie because I can. It's not stealing if it's legal. Let's just change the rules. Besides, it's middle management's fault. If they can't cook my books right, they're fired. They're fools. Let them be the ones who get caught. Taxes are for losers. I'm a winner, you see. Money is the magic stuff that set me free. And I lie. Why? Because I can. It's the pleasure and the privilege of the richest people in the land. Don't you understand? I don't give a damn for you. I don't give a damn for you. That's the truth. I lie because I can. Because I can. I lie because I can.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, May 14, 2009.
Zombie lies, EPA and pesticides, and God chooses sides. Plus,
life as we know it will no longer exist in 20 years. The air will be toxic with carbon dioxide. Mountains will slide into the oceans. California and Florida underwater. Who could save the planet from its peril?
That would be us, Glenn. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report.
Al Gore's behind me now, isn't he?
Okay, here she is now, saving our planet from peril. You promised, right?
Yeah.
Our own Desi Doyen.
Yeah, that was Fox News host Glenn Beck in our opening, who's doing a whole week of what he's calling inconvenient segments, attempting to cast doubt on the science of climate change.
Dramatic much? I rather enjoyed it.
Yeah, you can check out the full video on our website at greennews.bradblog.com. It's really funny, although probably not in the way he intended. Anyway, later in that segment, Beck promotes a new zombie lie.
What's a zombie lie?
Oh, zombie lies are false assertions that have been debunked over and over, only to rise again and again. It's like whack-a-mole trying to swat down the same debunked lies.
Yeah, who came up with that phrase,
zombie lie? I have no idea, but it works perfectly. All right. Anyway, the Wall Street Journal reported on a so-called secret White House memo that supposedly said EPA regulations will destroy the economy. This so-called secret memo was promptly picked up by Republicans in Congress and then dutifully broadcast by corporate media outlets. The problem is, it's simply not true.
What's not true? What the memo said?
The memo,
that it was a secret?
The memo actually, it's
what
not that it was
memo?
A secret. It was not a memo. It's actually just a single comment that was included in an interagency comment document. It's part of a standard process. It was one comment from one guy who was a holdover from the Bush administration who burrowed into the Small Business Administration. That's it. There's no secret White House memo. There's no disagreement with the White House and the EPA.
What did it say?
Basically that he called into question the economic effects of bringing in climate cap and trade legislation.
And the Republicans are claiming that this is proof that they...
That the White House disagrees with the EPA. That they're hiding their disagreements. And also, it's just one excellent example of how zombie lies, begin. The Republican media machine manages to manufacture a controversy, then make it into a major story for a whole news cycle, even though it's false. But it'll live forever on Google.
Yeah, and on Fox News, where it plays all day long on all the different shows, no matter how much truth there is or isn't in it.
Yes. The EPA this week banned the pesticide carbofuran, both in the U.S. and on imported food products,
saying it's
carbofuran.
Okay.
Saying that it's, quote, a toxic insecticide that does not meet current U.S. food safety standards. Specifically, the EPA revoked regulations that previously had permitted small residues of carbofuran on our food, saying that though the acceptable levels of that pesticide remaining on food are no longer acceptable and no longer safe for humans to have. The PR battle over cap and trade has reached a fever pitch in Congress, with fossil fuel industry spending nearly $76 million in lobbying since January, and now God has entered the climate change debate, but it's unclear which side he's on. Or she.
That's right.
The AmericanValuesNetwork.org has launched a radio ad campaign in southern states pointing to the Gospel of John to argue that Christians should support climate change legislation in Congress.
People of faith are speaking out. A great assembly of Christian pastors and churches and America's military leaders are demanding that Congress pass a climate bill that creates jobs, reduces our dependence on foreign oil, and especially protects the vulnerable families and communities at home and abroad who are most hurt by climate change.
Well, so it sounds like the religious folks are in favor of climate change.
Well, some of them. Meanwhile, back in Congress, Republicans are also quoting scripture. Here's Illinois Representative John Shimkus recently arguing against the need to address climate change.
Yes, after he was quoting scripture in this hearing, right?
Yes.
Here's what he said.
The earth will end only when God declares it's time to be over. Man will not destroy this earth. This earth will not be destroyed by a flood. I appreciate having panelists here who are men of faith, but I do believe God's word is infallible.
What does that mean? That's Congressman Shimkus. So he's saying God is against climate change regulations because...
I'm not exactly sure what the point is of that, but if you'll notice that the people in that hearing were men of faith, not men of science, and this is about the science behind climate change.
So it's unclear whose side God is on. We did receive a letter from a listener, though, and we thank you. Please send us your thoughts at greennews@bradblog.com on this. Al Sowens, whose email address begins obeytobesaved@, not going to give the rest of his address, but he says, y'all are evil, in all caps. So y'all love evil and hate good, he says about the Green News Report. The glue that binds y'all together is a commitment to sin, i.e. rebellion against the will of God. The cure for your eternal malaise is Hebrews chapter 5, verse 9, obedience to Jesus Christ, but y'all don't want to hear that. Lots of luck, Al Sowens.
You know, his timing is good. House Democrats said yesterday that they're close to an agreement and will move the bill into markup next week.
So that makes them evil and us evil?
It depends, I suppose, on who your perspective comes from.
All right, word is still out on whose side God is on. You can read that letter, and you can read much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been God's Green News Report.
Al Gore's behind me now, isn't he?
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
I saw you standing there.
Oh, I hate it when Windows Media Player screws me over. That's incredibly frustrating. Let's see. Let's try this again. I wonder if this is it. Yeah, that's it. It works much better this way. You'll figure out why I played this in a minute.
See the curtains hanging in the window in the evening on a Friday night. Little light is shining through the window, lets me know everything's all right. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind.
'72 at Seals and Crofts. Summer breeze on a horn.
Just kind of puts you in a just kind of puts you in a happy place, doesn't it? That summer breeze. You know, there's all kinds of wonderful things like that. Let's here we go. Here's another one that might work with the upcoming story.
I listen to the wind of my soul. Where I'll end up, well, I think only God really knows. Sat upon the setting sun, but never, 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 never. I never wanted water once, but never, never, never.
let my music take me where my heart wants to go. I swam upon the devil's lake, but never, 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 I'll never make the same mistake. No, never, never, never.
Terribly introspective, isn't it, Cat Stevens? I forget what its new name is, but it made some beautiful, beautiful music, he did. He did indeed. And, that was put in mind of songs about wind and breezes and... Because, the South's proudest son in the United States Senate put me in the mind of some winds and some breezes. That would be Senator Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions III, who has decided that there ain't nobody been tortured. And that place down there, that Gitmo that the Rush Limbaugh, that place, he sells T-shirts for it. It's so cute. They says Club Gitmo on it, like he's been there for a vacation where he was sodomizing prison. No, he does that in the Dominican Republic. My bad. Yeah, but all this kerfuffle about torturing and concentration camps, I don't understand it any more than I understand why them good old boys that I used to respect in the Klan had to go and smoke that dope. I just don't understand it. Right, yeah. Jeff Sessions, in describing the Guantanamo Bay concentration camp, Jeff Sessions said, them moose limbs, this is a quote, okay, wouldn't be treated any better in the United States, and they wouldn't have the tropical breezes blowing through. Yeah, the tropical breezes. It's like saying Auschwitz was in a scenic location, you know. Jesus. They got the tropical breeze, but I got to get, you know, you give the devil his due. They would not be treated any better in the United States. Our prison system is a hellhole to the world. We imprison more of our own citizens than any other so-called first world nation. We feed them garbage. Treat them worse. So that much I gotta give to Senator Sessions, Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions III. You might recall our buddy Loretta Nall from Alabama. Bless her heart. They tried to go and visit her brother when he was incarcerated. And the Alabama Department of Corrections wouldn't let her in because she weren't wearing no panties. Remember? Yeah. You can probably find the story at Nall, N-A-L-L, for governor.blogspot.com. It is it's one of the great stories of conservative America. Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. You ain't got no panties on. You can't visit your brother. Jesus. No, really. Guantanamo's a lovely place. Because it's got all them, tropical breezes. Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions III went on to say that Guantanamo is, in a word, it's a logical site. It's a logical site for us to have a concentration camp in. Logical site. Now, you know, I can't say that and me not play this.
early morning yesterday. I was up before the dawn, and I really have enjoyed my stay. But I must be moving on, like a king without a castle, like a queen without a throne. I'm a early morning lover, and I must be moving on. Now I believe in what you say.
Kind of grabbed me. It's also the wrong song. But the devil is my savior. Yeah, you can get it. Really, when you do what Jeff Sessions did and say the things that these right-wing maggots say, yeah. The devil is my savior. The prince of lies? Anyone? We do got some lying going on by the Republican right now, don't we? I'll see if we can get it right this time. There it is. Guantanamo is a logical sight.
When I was young, it seemed that life was so wonderful. To be sensible, logical, oh,
couldn't resist. And, you know, any excuse to play Supertramp is a good excuse. It's a logical sight. What's logical about a concentration camp? Really? What's logical about torture? What's logical? What's logical about it? A logical sight, Senator Sessions? Go somewhere, Senator Sessions. Go crawl back under that, go slither back under that rock where you live. Stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once. Logical. Logical. It's a logical side. Sticks in your craw just a little bit, don't it? Now, this place, this concentration camp, and it is a concentration camp. People there are of one religion. There is one reason there. They are of a particular religion from a particular place in the world. It's a concentration camp. The fact that we don't have any Zyklon B or any ovens there does not make it less of a concentration camp. It's a concentration camp. And it's ours. Yours, mine, and ours. So although Senator Sessions refers to it as a logical sight where the tropical breezes blow, it is nonetheless a concentration camp. And it is far better described by someone who was there as opposed to some pasty-faced, doughy old racist from the old Confederacy. It is far better described by Mustafa Ait Idir, who said, "For almost 7 years I was at the end of the world, at the worst place in the world. It would have been hard even if I had done something wrong. It is much harder when one is innocent." Innocent. Innocent. Because you see, we have no interest in the guilt or innocence of anyone. At Guantanamo Bay. We have interest only in warehousing our hated. We will. Your phone calls are welcome. You know, we've had some technical difficulties this evening. I hope I didn't run everyone off with them. It's about 12 minutes before 8 p.m. here on the East Coast. We'll take a little break and come back with your calls. You know the number, 304-658-3333, or toll-free, 877, the numeral 4, head-on. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Well, I've kind of got the clock all messed up tonight anyway, so we'll start hour three about 7 minutes before the hour, because we started the show at about 8 minutes after the hour, then had technical difficulties and yada, 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 and, well, you know, if you're still there, God bless you. So, let's see. Let's do this. Hey, why don't we do, here's a crazy idea. Why don't we do conversation radio? That's a nice idea, and I'll quit filibustering, and we will go to the phones where Sandra awaits. Hey, Sandra, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm all right.
Hey, listen, I saw that the voting shot up. Good Lord, that's great.
Yeah, it went a little crazy, didn't it?
What did that do to Mike?
Yeah.
Now, well, you know what?
Well, to be fair, it's due to our buddy Spike, who wrote to Mike, who then got the Truth Seekers involved.
Oh, okay, because, you say that contributes partly to if they hand out the nut, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm hoping it contributes a bunch.
Well, no, I just, you know, I mean, yeah, I don't see why you wouldn't qualify. I mean, so let's hope that works out. When do you hear?
I think they're supposed to make the announcement. See, there were three waves or three rounds, and I think the round one announcements come tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. I'd be surprised if you didn't get some look-see on that, man.
It would be very, very cool. But you know me, I don't count chickens till they're in the coop and laying eggs.
Oh, yeah. Well, we out here, your fan base can sort of send the either good vibe or evil eye, whatever works, right? yeah. Hey, listen, so what do you think of this person, committing suicide or whatever? That's too much, isn't it?
You know me, there's always a movie reference. And I heard about Mr. Alibi's suicide. And it reminded me of a movie that allegedly takes place in somewhere fairly nearby in that corner of the globe. There's that wonderful scene in Casablanca where Colonel Strasser, the Nazi colonel, looks at Rick Blaine, Humphrey Bogart, and said, "Yes, we have not yet decided whether or not he committed suicide or was shot trying to escape."
Oh man, no, but I.
Yeah, sure, suicide. Yeah, why not?
It's so sick. I have to say, this is drifting into, it really isn't getting enough coverage, and I'm still spinning out over Obama, all of a sudden, no pictures today, when the whole world knows what the hell they look like. I mean, what's that about?
Well, the only thing I can figure, I kind of hit on this a little bit last night. You know, Robert Gibbs, the presidential spokesman, saying, "Well, you know, it's only sensationalism." No, it's evidence. It's evidence of war crimes. But never mind. The only thing I can figure is that what Seymour Hersh told us years ago is the truth. That the pictures that we have seen, god awful as they are, pale in comparison to others that exist.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, I don't particularly want, Obama or anybody else to decide what is sensation or not. Aren't we talking about evidence?
Right. That's okay, so that's the province of the guys that wear the black robes, right?
Well, no, but I mean, yeah. So I'm not interested. I didn't vote for Obama to play moral decider. You know what I'm saying?
We had a decider for 8 years, and that didn't work out so well.
No, but that whole stance is so such BS, and it's just gaining ground in this country like no tomorrow. You know, letting these people make these sort of decisions instead of the law.
Yeah, and see, there is litigation ongoing. The ACLU sued the United States, and the Department of Justice reached, Eric Holder, that guy, reached a conclusion that the photographs were going to come out and that the administration should release them. And it was announced that the administration would release them before the judge could make them.
Right. No, that's what I mean. And so now, just on the, you know, now Obama is deciding what is best for what did he say? The war theater and all that gibberish that Bush used to say? I'm flashing back, dude.
Yeah, flashing hard.
Flash back. And it's just like.
Yeah, I thought we got past gibberish.
No, I'm so over it. I was like, you know what? This is smelling real bad now. I don't know if someone threatened his ass or what's happening, but I don't know.
Well, no, it's one of those learning curve things. He's learning some hard lessons, Sandra. And this is not by way of an excuse. Please understand me. He's learning some hard lessons, though. He saw the way that the right-wing hate machine was facilitated by the corporate for-profit media over something as relatively simple as the torture memos being released.
This is his reaction to that, which is, to me...
Yeah, his reaction is, I don't want no more of that.
If that's the case, this is not good. And, you know, he's turning out to be a bit mushy up in here. And, you know, I don't like it, but thankfully you and I, we're not as crazed as some of these Obama supporters are. I've heard some of the damnedest excuses. He's playing chess, you know, it's a grand scheme, somehow, you know, these people who think it's a grand scheme no matter what he does when it's effed up, you know them people?
Yes.
Well, thankfully, we're not those, because, I mean, I have had a healthy skepticism from day one, but I'm not happy that it's all kind of panning out, and I'm not going to sit here and try to make excuses. This is not right.
No, I ain't carrying no water on this one.
No, I'm quite disturbed by it, but, you know, I'm not, like, totally blown away, because it seems like once you get in that situation, the national security state takes over and whoever.
And see, you talk about the national security state, and I realize this is a little bit off topic, but I'm looking at an email here, or a news story here that was emailed to me. Our buddy News Ninja Susan sent this to me from the New York Times. Mm. From the New York Times yesterday, Dateline Imperial, California. And the photograph that accompanies the story is of a bunch of children dressed as cops, you know, with the whole black vest, blue pants, blue shirt thing, holding toy rifles, you know, complete with toy banana clips, okay? 10 minutes into errant mayhem in this town near the Mexican border, and the gunman, a disgruntled Iraq war veteran, has already taken out two people, one slumped in his desk, the other covered in blood on the floor. The responding officers, 8 teenage boys and girls, the youngest 14, face tripwire, a thin cloud of poisonous gas and loud shots, bam, bam, fired from behind a flimsy wall. They move quickly, pellet guns drawn and masks affixed. United States Border Patrol, put your hands up, screams one in a voice cracking with adolescent determination as the suspect is subdued. This is a program of the Boy Scouts. Most notably, the Boy Scouts Explorers Program.
Oh, wow.
I guess one of these kids is going to wind up being Pope. I mean, that's how it works now. You join the Hitler Youth, and then you get to be Pope, right?
Stop, man. Listen, not to shift gears, but that trip is a disaster. I've been rolling homeboy against this wall, homeboy over at this wall. Still a Nazi youth, right?
And here's the
wall. He prays that that MF-er is a Nazi, according to everybody.
Oh, you know, if it quacks like a duck and it walks like a duck and it, you know, digs tank traps for allied armor like a duck, well, you know, a pull quote from this story from the New York Times. A.J. Lowenthal, a sheriff's deputy in Imperial County, you know, it's right down there on the Mexican border.
Mm.
He says, this is about being a true-blooded American guy and girl. It fits right in with the honor and bravery of the Boy Scouts.
Oh, along with their founder, who was fish-eyeing all the little boys, right? Come on now.
Yeah, I know. But, yeah. You know, this is that America.
Well, that America is really scary, and I appreciate the youngins being put in that position. That's sick, man.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here right next to Horn intern Junior Grade Ferg, who is all of 13.
Right, right, yes.
And he just saw the photo, and I want to let you know there's hope for America's future, because a 13-year-old boy, healthy, red-blooded American male, just looked at that photograph and said, oh, my God.
Well, he needs to keep...
What happened to learning how to tie square knots?
Yeah, he needs to keep that level of shock. That'll help him get through it. That's a mess. Is he in the Boy Scouts?
No. Well, we tried that. We tried that for a couple of years using Cub Scouts and stuff. We even won the local father-son bake-off competition, Sandra. Went down to the Greenbrier Resort with our little and you know, I'm one of those weird parents, because if the kid has a thing that says, you know, here's where you do this, the kid has to do that. So I said, okay, son, you know, take out the cream cheese. It's going to, and because we did a cheesecake. And you know, put it in the mixer, and he did all the work, and I sat there and supervised. And it was a delightful cheesecake. And we went down to the Green Bar and got our asses whooped.
Why? Because everyone's mothers did it?
Mothers? Pastry chefs.
Oh, God. That's so boring when that happens.
I mean, there was everything but a nude chocolate sculpture there. God.
Strippers jumping out of cakes.
Yeah, everything. Yeah, you know how a 13-year-old boy's mind works. He says everything but strippers jumping out of cakes.
You know, I shouldn't be encouraging. He needs to stop. What in the world? That's funny. Oh, well, at least, yeah.
You know, that's the Boy Scouts we signed up for.
Shut up, man. Well, okay, that's a joke, then, as it should be. But what that story you're talking about isn't, though. That's scary.
Yeah, it is. And that's where we're taking the youth of this country. And that's where all of this acquiescence, and, you know, I'm not even saying that the Obama administration is predisposed toward that kind of authoritarianism, but that kind of acquiescence to pre-existing authoritarianism is equally deadly, equally poisonous.
Well, no, and then it's just sort of, you know, you get exercised by it, and then you have to sort of get yourself jerked back and realize the blood-drenched history of this place. It's just sort of like, okay. You know what I mean? You want to think that you progress, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, I got another example for you, okay? And I'm not just throwing stuff off the wall at you to hear your outrage. But the News Ninja Gene sent me a story last night, because from time to time on the program, I've mentioned this really cool little website with this really cool little animation. It's called The Story of Stuff, okay? And it's, you know, stick figures. A woman named Annie Leonard, who is a former Greenpeace activist, narrates, and it's about the consumption cycle.
My friend Carrie sent that video to me a while ago. I know, I've seen that.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, yeah, it hits the New York Times a few days ago, and all of a sudden there's a hissy. You know, because teachers have been using it in their classrooms to teach about consumption and about what we're doing to the planet and all of that kind of stuff.
And the right wing is just now getting a sample of that?
Yep. The Heritage Foundation has issued a press release about it, saying
what?
This should be retitled The Story of Lies.
Oh, no, and they actually got their complaint published in the New York Times?
No, they put out their own press release. No, the complaint that was published in the New York Times, that's the real beauty, it was going to be used in the Missoula, Montana school system.
Oh, and the right-wing put a stop to that?
And a right-wing mommy complained and wrote into the school system and said, this film don't say not one good thing about capitalism. Yeah, that's the first thing I did, too. But that's quote. It don't say one good thing about capitalism.
Oh, dear God. You know how long it's been since I've seen that? That's been around the web and the world about 100 times at this point.
Yeah, 2007.
These people are so jacked up.
Yeah, a little Osley on the Ebway, you know.
Oh, my. You know, listen.
Yeah, they drive slow on where the Internet's concerned, the right wing drives slow on the driveway, you know.
Oh, no, but I mean, that's a, you know, okay, maybe it could be considered... somewhat subversive, but I don't, you know, it just seems to make a lot of sense to me at this point. You would think that they would be showing that on the hour, every hour in the state we're in now, right?
Yeah, you would, but no.
Yeah. And some idiot who probably is one illness away from disaster is complaining about no capitalism. Oh, I love it.
It just slays me.
Actually, at this point, you know, I'm just feeling hella irritated by it because it's like, what do you, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good thing we don't have the Star Trek transporters and stuff, because I would definitely want that Missoula, Montana mama's coordinates, because I'd like to go out there and just look her in the eye and say, and what good things would you like to say about capitalism, lady? Have you looked at the economy lately? Have you seen what capitalism has done to this country?
Wow, yeah, no, I mean, to hear anybody go on about the virtues of capitalism right now is like a joke. And even anyone with any sense, you know, they keep the lid on it for a minute until they can find the next bubble to blow up, at least. And they're trying, believe you me.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Man.
And And again, you know, this all really does, this isn't just some psychotic babble that I'm engaged in here on my end, Sandra. It all does tie together because it comes back to that, this idea of incrementalism. You know, if you would compare this with, say, the civil rights movement, the way the Obama administration is going forward, were they handling the civil rights movement, they would say, okay, We'll let them have water fountains, but not lunch counters. We're not ready for lunch counter integration, but we can integrate water fountains.
Or, like Nixon wanted to do, just hope and talk to the businesses and know that they will do right. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
Song and dance?
Right.
And Obama, no, I'm not too sure. You know, to me, I am so, I don't know, I am kind of surprised that he is as weak as he's coming across. It's like, dude. You got all houses. You got the presidency. What the hell? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Can we do something now, please?
Not only that, but my other, you know, I'm starting to wonder, do they not want to have, it looks like, you know, because.
They're scared, Sandra. They're scared. I'm telling you, we could sit here and you and I, being rational, fairly intellectual people, could come up with intellectual explanations for why they're doing what they're doing. But at the end of the day, they're scared. Harry Reid is scared. Nancy Pelosi is scared. Barack Obama and the whole administration are scared. And they are scared, you know, well, I mean, I guess to a certain extent, rightfully so, for Barack Obama, because, you know, the Secret Service is working overtime with the right-wing zealots who want to gun him down. But the rest of them are scared of nothing so much as being called ugly names by the right wing and having their willing accomplices in the for-profit media advance that theme.
Well, but yeah, they obviously, you know, they don't trust the people that they represent. That's apparent. And
because the people that they represent can be manipulated by the for-profit media operating on the themes provided to them by the vile right wing.
Right, but the Democrats don't seem to fight back, and I'm concluding now that they don't want to, because, for example, this Al Franken thing, this is some sort of theater of the absurd now, Bob. It really is. It's like some sort of weird Kafka-esque type hell. I'm like, hello. You know,
oh, I know. It's driving me just bug-eyed. But what's the answer?
No, but it's just, no, I don't know. I don't understand.
I mean, if we get a bunch of people to go and rant and rave and scream in front of Tim Pawlenty's office, the governor of Minnesota, demanding that he sign the certification of Al Franken's victory, is that what it takes? Do we have to behave like right-wing thugs behave? Do we have to do in Minnesota what they did in Florida? Is that what this is? Is that what we're waiting for here?
Well, no, but I guess what I'm saying, and what I'm surprised by is, once again, there is no sort of outrage. If this was the Republicans, they would have their minions on whatever show talking this up night and day, night and day, night and day, if they didn't have one of their folks being seated somewhere. You know that's true. So
they're stealing democracy from Jesus.
Oh, God. You know, or some, I don't, you know, that. And another thing that was bugging me was like, the don't ask, don't tell, what's happening? They had, like, whipped that from their website, and now it's not an issue they want to deal with?
Yeah, even though we're losing Arab language linguists, which we don't just have a surfeit of.
West Point people from the sounds of it.
Yeah, oh, the photograph of the guy is there. He's got that funny little, you know, 1822, you know, gray uniform with the crossbar, all of that foolishness. Yeah, one of them.
Yeah.
We went and spent, let's see, I read somewhere once upon a time, I think a West Point education is something on the order of $1 million or more.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to throw that out the window. The guy wasn't trying to get out of the military. He's just trying to get out of the closet.
No, and it's just sort of, I mean, it's just beyond the beyond. And now all of a sudden, it's not something that they want to deal with again.
And again, I come back to fear.
And then the Max Baucus thing, it's like sort of bad theater. It's funny because then people keep popping up. And he keeps arresting them. It's like, you know what, MF-er? Get a clue. Good Lord. I got about 20 professors calling Congress this past week over that. You know what I mean?
Well, cool on you, though, for that.
Well, no, because you know me, I'm obnoxious. I was like, hey, whatever. And I explained the situation, and I'm pretty sure they all sort of called. You know, because it's just that. Healthcare thing is really disturbing me because I'm envisioning, this is my vision. Everyone's required to buy private health care with a deductible of $10,000.
Wow, I could see that happening.
Right. This is what I envision. I'm like, you know, these people are so corrupt and disgusting that the healthcare industry be like, great. 40 more million mandatory customers, and we don't even have to cover them. They have to pay us. I mean, this is what I envision in this warped ass country.
And that sounds so likely a scenario, so spot on, Sandra, that it makes my head hurt.
Right, and it's just sickness.
Because you know what? I mean, just to be clear on this and put a really, really fine point on it, high deductible insurance coverage ain't insurance coverage.
Well, you know, that's what I'm saying, but it's a new market for these vultures who will somehow set it up. So I, with no health insurance, will be paying money for some health insurance that doesn't exist. I mean, like car insurance in California, I don't know if it's nationwide or not, but you can't drive without having basics, right?
Yeah, same. Yeah, you have statutory minimums here in West Virginia. It's 2040.
Right. And, you know, there is some argument for that, but it's not the same as your health, but this is an argument that I can see coming down if we don't step up to make a change, because this is what they would like to say. Oh, we'll accept everyone precondition, but they have to buy into our private programs, you know?
Yeah, with a massive deductible so that they don't ever have to pay anything.
Right. That's, you know.
And then everything that all those uninsured people are paying into goes into the Christmas bonus of the CEO. That's all it is all the way you're describing it would be little more than a funding mechanism for the CEO's corporate year-end bonus.
Right. Well, I mean, but tell me, am I wrong, though, Bob?
No, you're not.
You know, I mean, I know it's a bit extreme, but at this point, I just see.
I don't think a $10,000 mandatory pay the policy, I don't think that's extreme. That sounds like the kind of thing that lobbyists say. Oh, we got a great idea for you here.
Right, and I can see them, you know, using the for-profit media to try to spin that, because unfortunately, the vast majority of people who aren't covered aren't exactly on steps to the Capitol, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, no, because they can't get there.
Exactly, and so, you know, it's and the poor old people looking to that, is it AARP?
AARP, sure, yeah.
Yeah, that's a joke, because that group is not interested in any kind of expanded.
Well, no, they've got a deal with the insurance companies.
Well,
they sell insurance for the insurers.
Right, and so the poor deceived older folks, they'll have them scared up.
Yeah, absolutely. And see, I started this evening sort of prattling on in between technical problems about language and about what language means. And see, I like this unadulterated, unwatered down language that we use here on the horn, Sandra. that you use, that I use, that everybody else uses. And I just want to look at America. I want to look at corporate America. I want to look at the little scared right-wingers and the rest of the dinosaur crowd and say, listen to me. Fine. You keep your really crappy health care coverage, okay? You keep that health care coverage that pays to cover a specialist who denies or permits claims, who gets their bonus paid based on how many 17-year-old girls kidney transplants they've denied in a year. You keep that. That's fine. But for the rest of us who actually want meaningful coverage, we're going to do something else.
Yeah, and it's just the thing that's just an outrage is that you now have 60-odd% of medical people who want this single payer now.
And they can't even have a place in a damned conference.
And it's just obscene that this pig who got over almost $200,000 from pharma and all these other vultures is leading the meeting for the Finance Committee of all committees. You know what I'm saying? What the F?
Well, I mean, you don't want people who don't have a lot of money at a Finance Committee meeting. I mean, that's just silly, isn't it?
Well, I just think that that particular committee and that particular senator is like, what's up with that? What happened to, I don't know. The whole thing just smacks of I don't know what. That's why.
Corruption. I think the word you're looking for is corruption.
Well, I'm glad to see at least, you know, some of these groups, doing that arrest me, civil disobedience, because that's where it's at, because we've been effectively locked out.
And see, it's actually kind of patriotically inspiring who went out there and got arrested in this situation, because those were doctors.
Yeah, they're doctors. I mean, this is what I'm saying. It's like, you know.
And they've got DEA numbers, okay?
Yeah, war with the people providing the actual health care now. I mean, the system is so sick. And it's just absurd that the lobbyists are still trying to write the legislation, and they're not, you know, all of it. It's just, it really has driven me crazy this week, because without the leadership of Obama, you know what I'm saying? It's going to go the same way as, remember the cram downs? Remember their outrage when that got scuttled? Did you hear a word one? You heard nothing.
Beep! Yeah. Yeah.
That's their bill. That was their bill. Where were they?
Yeah, and you know, Cossack's reminding me in the chat room here, Sandra. Baucus, Democrat, has gotten over $1 million from the health care interests.
Okay, so it's $1 million. I knew it was something real crazy.
Yeah, it's insane. And how can you look at this and not call that what it is? Again, back to language. It's called bribery. He's taken bribes. It's quid pro quo, tit for tat.
And what is this? What is this turning the law on people like they are too? I mean, and these things are being sort of normalized in our minds. But all of it is just sucks. Okay, let me just say that word because it is. It's really depressing.
In the extreme.
But, yeah, so I don't know. I don't know. We always just sort of jump around. I'm still sort of stuck on the torture thing because.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because I just got the John Fox just shot me some breaking news from over at Crooks and Liars.
Yeah.
And this is via, I guess, NBC. And this is the text. Two U.S. intelligence officers confirm that Vice President Cheney's office suggested waterboarding an Iraqi prisoner, a former intelligence official for Saddam Hussein, who was suspected to have knowledge of a Saddam al-Qaeda connection. The former chief of the Iraq Survey Group, Charles Dulfer, in charge of interrogations, tells the Daily Beast that he considered the request reprehensible. Much of the information in the report of the 9/11 Commission was provided through more than 30 sessions of torture of detainees. Go to Crooks and Liars to find this thing. Crooksandliars.com.
Wow.
We know now. I mean, we don't know now. We knew then where it was coming from.
Well, no, but isn't it interesting how that freak is on every channel, station, town.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's got, like, long underwear that's infused with the soil of his native land or something so he can move about in the daylight or something.
Well, I got my garlic and whatnot ready for that, mother. So, no, but he's everywhere. And you couldn't get him out of the tomb when he was in power.
No.
And now he's framing the dialogue and scaring Obama?
Yes.
So much for his funny jokes. The joke's on him.
Yeah, because he will shoot him in the face.
And us. And he'll interrogate him.
Yeah, I mean, that was real cute when he said Dick Cheney would be here, but he's out promoting his new book, How to Shoot Friends and Interrogate People.
Yeah, well, no, his whole act was off. All of it was funny, but it's wearing thin with there's no substance involved as far as Obama's concerned. I mean,
I come back to my theme. They are not acting, they are reacting, and the reacting they are doing is based entirely and exclusively on fear.
Whoa.
And now, see, if you said to them you're acting from fear, they'd say, no, we're acting from political reality, which is a Washington phrase for fear. Just like Nancy Pelosi can't say the CIA lied to Congress. She has to say they misled us.
Now, she was looking mighty crazy, too. I'm like, oh, they must have got her.
She was looking a little lit up.
Yeah, she looked kind of like, I mean, all of them are looking freakish. I can say drip, 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 because this stuff keeps coming out. Obama ain't going to be able to get nothing done until this is addressed. Mark my word. I don't think it's going to stop.
I don't think it is either.
You know, so I don't know what he thinks he's going to do.
Maybe he thinks he's going to get it done in the second term, Sandra.
Oh, God.
Second term disease is one of the worst things that affects an American presidency. You know, to be fair, it even happened with the dim leader. You remember when he came out and said, I got me some political capital now and I'm going to spend it.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Well, no, the joke's on us because now they're making noises about this entitlement program is going to be insolvent and this one's insolvent. And sorry, people, we're going to have to relieve you of that program, too. You hear them little chatter going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's time to have the hard talk about Social Security.
Right. It's always, you know, they just stop. They're not going to rest until.
When are we going to have the hard talk about Wall Street bankers?
Or the $500 billion every year for the military. How about that chat?
Sure.
That's just a nightmare.
Or, hey, look, you want to get real prosaic? How about sugar subsidies? When can we have that talk?
More importantly is. Brent Favre coming back.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, God. Yeah. Wait. There's a Carrie Prejean. Is it Prejean or Prejean? There's one of those stories out there today.
Oh, what happened now?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm just going by. I'm just going by. No, I'm. slid right off.
Slid off, yeah.
No, I guess it's an older story. It's May 11th. But this business about her. Oh, when all else fails, go on the radio with Dr. Dobson.
You know what? Yuck. He's too creepy with his get in the shower with your son.
Yeah, beat your children till they cry real tears. Yeah, that guy. No, she went, really, honest to God, she went on the radio with Dr. Dobson's Focus on the Family. Why did you give the answer you did with regard to the affirmation of marriage?
Why are you a trollop?
There is that one. You sitting down, Sandra? Because you're going to love this one.
Yeah.
I mean, you liable start speaking in tongues or something.
Oh, no. What is it?
Why did you give the answer you did with regard to the affirmation of marriage? See, that's how they've rebranded it. It's the affirmation of marriage. I felt as though Satan was trying to tempt me in asking me this question.
What? No, you know what? I don't believe you, okay? Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. This is one of those I live for with you, Sandra.
Oh, my God. That's, like, fantastic. Is that on YouTube? Or?
I found it over at Huffington Post.
I felt as though Satan was trying to tempt me and asking me this question. And then God was in my head and in my heart saying, do not compromise this. You need to stand up for me, and you need to share with all these people. You need to witness to them, and you need to show that you're not willing to compromise that for this title of Miss USA.
Well, did God tell her about those breastuses?
Yeah, see, that question, no, I'm thinking that was when the devil got hold of her, too.
Oh.
And he was D-cup devil.
Oh, see?
Because there's another picture out, see, and this may be the most damning photograph of all. Her demon breastuses are covered in this photograph.
Mm.
But she's standing next to a dope fiend.
What? You don't know what you sound like.
She is, Sandra. She is standing next to a dope fiend. She's a standing there with her little bikini top on, and he ain't got no clothes on above the waist. He ain't wearing nothing but a pair of sunglasses, and he's a dope fiend. She's a standing there all snuggled up against Michael Phelps like she just wants to lick the Wheaties right off of him.
Oh, no. God. That poor bastard, he really should have stayed in the pool, first of all.
Yeah, don't get out. I don't care. I don't care if you got shrinkage and prunage going on.
You need to stay in.
Stay. And the chlorine is better for you. It isn't near as bad for you as what's going on outside the natatorium, Michael.
My God, I mean, you know, talking about DA.
And this is and this is pre-demon breastuses, too.
Okay, so... He's still working with them mosquito bites, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there ain't just a hell of a lot of difference between Michael Phelps and her, frankly, except for maybe the hair.
You? No. Oh, God, no. Thank you for that image. What the hell? God, it's like a bad circus.
It is a bad circus, and no one gets to go home. It's like a parody of Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave.
Yeah.
This here's America.
No, that's what it is here. Like, we're having another... Oh, my God, a $40 billion gap. You know, it's, again, some huge $30 billion gap. Again.
I know.
It's horrible because now some of the things I've heard that they want to do, it's just sort of stunning, you know, like cutting health, whatever health care across the board. You know, people will be dying, basically.
Yeah, they will. And, I mean, we play and we have our fun and stuff, but, yeah, they will.
So, I mean, I'm just saying, it's just, you know, as far as the whole Groundhog Day, wow, it is like that. And that's a good one, the circus that you can, how'd you put that, you can never leave?
Yeah, you can check out, but you can never leave. It's Hotel California all over the place.
Oh, God, yes. Well, listen, on that note, I'll, you know, hang up.
Sandra, you have a wonderful evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye now. And let's go straight to Juanita. Hey, Juanita.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Last night I sent you an email while I was watching that hearing
mm-hmm.
on torture.
Yes.
And it just got worse and worse and worse. That guy, no wonder you said what you did on your show yesterday about Leslie Graham.
Oh, was he disgusting or was he disgusting?
Oh, he was more than disgusting. He had this smirk on his face, too. And he never questioned anybody except the ones that sort of agreed with him. Well, the one man, you know, everything, oh, that wasn't torture. And then the other guy, well, people do things when they're scared. And then when the one man spoke up who was against it, he said, do you think this should be prosecuted?
Do I think a bear pees in the woods? I mean...
And something else he said, but there was one thing that the one guy, the white-haired guy, you know, that was saying, oh, you know, people do things when they're scared, and we were scared, you know, the government was scared after 9/11 happened, and... They did things they shouldn't have done and all. And he said they were talking about there hadn't been any charges brought against them. And he said that you don't have to bring charges against prisoners of war. Well, if I'm not mistaken, didn't they protest that these were not prisoners of war? And therefore, they didn't have to treat them with the Geneva Convention?
I do believe.
Huh?
Yeah. No, that, no, the Geneva Convention does not apply.
Yeah, they said they weren't prisoners of war. They were enemy combatants.
Right.
They weren't prisoners of war.
They do not have, the Red Cross had to raise holy ruckus to even get in and find out what was going on in that concentration camp.
And this guy on there was saying, and of course, Leslie, or Graham, what's his name? Lindsey Graham.
Lindsey. Yeah.
You know.
Well,
but
they're giving away crazy on the corner in the Repig Lickin' Party, Juanita, because, you know, yesterday it was Lindsey Graham in the Congress. Today it was Repig Lickin' Congressman Pete Hoekstra from New York.
Oh, Lord have mercy. I guess I'll watch that. What did he do?
Well, he showed up on Fox being queried by Shepard Smith about whether or not waterboarding is torture. Now, first off, Pete Hoekstra, whatever his name is. It's kind of like boner. You don't know exactly how to pronounce
right.
it because it ain't writ in English. He said, I don't know if it's torture or not. And Shepard Smith says, I'd like an answer, sir. He asked him four times whether it was torture. And he finally said the following question. And waterboarding is or is not torture? Well, there's a wide range of waterboarding. I'm telling you that I know waterboarding was used, Shep. I'm not mincing words. I'm saying I believe the techniques used in 2002, in 2003, which included waterboarding in a specific format that I'm aware of how they used it, that I believe that was consistent with U.S. law. There's a wide range of waterboarding, Juanita.
Uh-huh. I guess there's a wide range of torture, too, ain't
yeah.
there?
You know, it's, right. And, you know, there's some of that fun, some of that, so there's that fun waterboarding. And then there's that not quite so much fun waterboarding. And then there's that really sucks kind of waterboarding. But it was all consistent with the law.
But the one thing that I did like was that Lindsey Graham brought up about that guy saying, well, we waterboarded this one man in 35 seconds. He confessed everything. And the guy that was in behind the wall that was there, and he said, no, he's withdrawn. He said that wasn't correct. That didn't happen. Oh, and Lindsey Graham said, oh, I didn't know that. Well.
Yeah, well, Lindsey.
And then on The View, Elizabeth said, well, I'm so glad he's not showing those pictures. This makes me feel so much safer. That he's not showing those, that Obama's not showing those pictures. And,
yeah, because the Muslims that live in the mansion next door won't burn her house down now. Right, got it.
Yeah. Barbara Walters said, this, Liz, this is the first time I ever heard you agree with Obama. But, I have to say, Joy spoke up and wasn't really noticed that much about it, but she spoke up and said, that truth has to come out eventually. And if he doesn't show them now, they're going to have to come out sooner or later. We have a right to know.
And everybody who covered it up or tried to hide it away or tried to take the sting out of it or tried to minimize its reality will be tarred with the same brush.
Oh, yeah. And
you can either, this is one of those easy ones. I don't care how scared the Obama administration is, Juanita. This is one of those easy ones. You stand up for what's right or you facilitate what's wrong. And it's going to be a real bright line between the two.
But getting back to Lindsey Graham, I recall how he acted up in the impeachment of Bill Clinton.
Oh, wasn't he just holier than thou?
Oh, my. And he brought up about, oh, we have some evidence on him. It's just so, oh, terrible, horrible, you know. And what it was that woman that had been hating Bill for years and getting money from him. Oh, he raped me. I hate him. He raped me. Well, get over it, woman. But I don't believe her.
Yeah, she tripped. She tripped.
I don't believe her.
Yeah, she.
I don't hate the people that rape me.
She tripped him and hit the ground before he did.
Yeah, she's hanging around for some money. And he was bringing that. He brings up these things and then he never corrects himself. I'm getting back to Lindsey Graham. He never corrects himself. And you know good and well that if they could get something like this on Obama,
oh,
all hell would break loose, and you know it.
Yes, it would. And you don't use that.
It would be worse than it was with Bill Clinton.
Oh, you're darn right.
The most ridiculous thing that ever happened. That I tell
and yet, it is a period of sublime political silliness in our history that informs everything that has happened to this day. Because if any Democrat dares to breathe the word impeachment in regard to a Republican president, we saw it for the last 8 years. What you're just trying to get revenge for what we did to Bill Clinton?
Yeah, or you hate him. You hate him. You hate Bush. No, I don't like the man.
Yeah, no, no, it's not about
my hatred.
Well, no, let me. This is how I look at it. It's not about hating any individual.
Right.
Yeah, it's not about hating George Bush. It's about loving the Constitution.
Yeah, loving our country. But it really, it just got worse and worse and worse that hearing. And just Bill, Lindsey was just. Lindsey Graham just was so full of himself.
Oh, he is just a mealy mouth thing, isn't he?
He is. And he was smirking. And somebody said something after they had convened. Somebody said something about it, said, we want justice. And he just kind of, oh, boy. I'd like to slap him up the side of his head.
Yeah, what's the phrase you probably grew up with and I did too? Slap some sense into him?
Yeah, right.
I mean, wasn't that what the attention slap was for that was authorized in the Bybee memo? The attention slap where you grab somebody in the crook of your arm and you start slapping them in the head real good? You're slapping some sense into them.
Yeah. There you go. People do that to the children. Slap some sense into them. Slap with your dog. Slap your...
slap, 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 slap.
Yeah.
Hey, Juanita, I got to roll along, dear, but thank you very much.
Can I just say... I was going to say one more thing, but now I forgot.
Oh, darn. You sure? Well, remind me tomorrow, okay?
Okay.
Because it'll come back to you the minute we go click.
I know. Okay, you have a good evening.
We'll talk to you soon, Juanita.
Okay,
bye.
Bye
now. And Cindy is calling, I believe, from Washington State. Hey, Cindy, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thanks for making it.
I was listening to you talking to Sandra about how things are and how absolutely crazy it is. Seems like, you know, we take to the streets, we work our tails off, we get some guy elected, and it's back to the same old, like, don't they ever listen to us? Right? Isn't that kind of the tone of it?
It sure is a heck of a lot of what it feels like. Now, but bear in mind, I forget who I was saying this to the other day, I know what I was having a conversation with Joe Vecchio. And I said, look, you know, I went and voted for Barack Obama, but I voted for him never for an instant thinking he was any kind of a liberal. He's not. He is a moderate. He is a centrist. I think if you told him, look, you can declare it any way you want it, we still would not have universal single-payer health care. Because he wants to take care of that for-profit misery business.
I understand what you mean. He never was a liberal, and I voted for him, and I know he's not a liberal too. But mine was a protectionist vote. I mean, look at the other choice, for heaven's sake. Wasn't it obvious?
Yes, it was. And that's, you know, I do try to hang on to that and understand. And, you know, Mark Levine mentioned it during his hour. There is no comparison between what our choices were. It was Barack Obama or 4 more years of George Bush in the form of Grandpa Grumpy McCain.
I was sitting here scratching my head and going crazy trying to figure out what in the heck went wrong this time. It sounded so familiar. How do you put it in words? And I found a book that explains it very easily. And so everybody get your pencils and pens out, and I give you the title of this book. It cost me $3, and I got my copy at Alibris, Alibris, which is a used book site on the net, Alibris.com. $3, Bob.
Okay.
So it's called The Assassination of Julius Caesar, A People's History of Ancient Rome.
Oh, I'll bet that's interesting.
The author is Michael Parenti, spelled P like parent, A-R-E-N-T-I. Michael Parenti.
Okay.
And the whole book is about how our history has always been written by white gentlemen, people that are patriarchs, that are, you know, part of the upper class. And as such, we only get the patriarch's view of history. We never get a true view of history. You know, Rome was a glorious state that, you know, conquered the world and became a great empire. It wasn't an oligarchy, bloodthirsty, plundering, raping, pillaging, stealing, and running home to live on the fat of the land as they extracted money from the slaves. You know, and any freed person had to pay taxes to the point of sheer poverty. Men and, you know, the soldiers of Rome, after they served in the Roman army for 30 years, they finally came home and got a wife and kids. And they weren't allowed to own property. They couldn't own their own home. They were renters. And many of them were left without work. So they were in the streets as beggars with their wives and children after serving 30 years in the Roman army, you know.
Yeah, I explained some of that. We talked about a little bit of that last night. Exactly. And the, you know, the lost legions, the legions who never came home. Absolutely.
So I was reading the very clear history of all of this, and then I came across the part that talks about our Constitution. And this is where all the bells and whistles went off and it came thundering home to me. It says that the Roman Constitution was a balanced, and balanced is in quotes, a balanced mix of regal, aristocratic, and democratic powers as represented respectively by the consuls, the Senate, and the Assembly. And it was never really seriously threatened by the enormous influence of the Senate. That august body contained the men who possessed the greatest administrative experience and political wisdom. This is how the patriarch saw it. The practice of hailing a balanced or mixed constitution as the finest and most stable of all governing arrangements goes back to ancient times, referring to the three forms of governance, which are kingship, aristocracy, and democracy. It is clear that Polybius, the old historian, said, it's clear that we should regard as the best constitution the one which includes elements of all three of these species. Cicero concurs, favoring a system with all three, though seemingly not in equal measure. Indeed, it's not clear what an equal blend of the three could be, given their inherently contradictory and antagonistic essences. It has long been presumed that the diversity of constitutional forms makes for an optimal result. In reality, it creates a system of impediments that makes popular reform nearly impossible. As with Plebeius and Cicero, so with Aristotle, and so with the framers of the United States Constitution in 1787, who were heavily influenced by their reading of the classics and by their own property class concerns, all have been mindful of the leveling threats of democratic forces and the need for a constitutional mix that allows only limited participation by the people
with a dominant role allotted to the elite executive power. That same concern predominated among those who contrived the constitution of today's capitalist Russia. Such has been the real nature of the mixed constitution, diluting the democratic power with a preponderance of undemocratic mix does not create an admirable balance and stability. In actual practice, the diversity of form more often has been a subterfuge, allowing an appearance of popular participation in order to lend legitimacy to an oligarchic dominance.
Dadgum, and that is from The Assassination of Julius Caesar, People's History of Ancient Rome by Michael Peretti.
That's right.
I think I'm going to try to get my hands on that.
That says it all, doesn't it, Bob? I keep looking at what we've got today and saying, we don't live in a democracy anymore. This is an oligarchy. Those rich people in D.C. and New York City and Connecticut and, you know, in their bubble, they all sit on our backs. They're crushing us with taxes. There's no decent employment. We're at the mercy of their whims and whimsies.
And, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, Cindy, because I'm looking at an article right now that I didn't fully get to, but folks can find it over at truthout.org. It's an absolutely fascinating article and well worth the time. Truthout.org, it is by Harold Meyerson. The original article comes from the Washington Post, and it's called Card Check and Gut Check.
Okay.
And it is about the Employee Free Choice Act. But there are larger ramifications. It talks about, let me share this with you real quick. He talks about how in opposing the Employee Free Choice Act, big business is now running around saying, well, but they'll lose their secret ballot and the democracy will go to hell and, you know, all of that.
Uh-huh.
And Meyerson writes, but the kind of democratic choice that business favors is choice without consequence, a position made clear by its opposition to the other key component of the EFCA, binding arbitration between company and union if they've been unable to agree on a contract within 120 days of a union winning election. A study of first contract negotiations by John Paul Ferguson and Thomas A. Kochan of MIT's Sloan School of Management makes clear why such arbitration is needed. After surveying 22,000 unionization campaigns between 1999 and 2004, the authors found that even after a majority, and this is the important part, this is what dovetails with what you were just talking about, even after a majority of workers voted for a union, they actually reached a contractual agreement with management which has no legal obligation to come to an agreement, only 56% of the time. So only 56% of the time, the democratically expressed majority will of the workers, only 56% of the time did that result in that that expression of will being made manifest.
Well, that's a pretty good track record if you compare it to what we got in America at large.
But it's not if you compare it to what, you know, if they're talking about majority rule and people voting, you know, the point is that the moneyed elite, the business elite, wants to keep working people on their knees. He describes it by saying heads, management wins, tails, the employee loses. It's a lovely system for businesses that don't want to pay higher wages or accord their workers some rights, and they've been fighting hard to keep it that way. They've managed for now to cow some cowable Democratic senators, which is why Iowa Senator Democratic Senator Tom Harkin, who's trying to steer EFCA through the Senate, is negotiating with a number of his colleagues. It's a moving target, he says.
Exactly. This last year, my family joined the steelworkers. You can join the United Steelworkers without being a steelworker because they have an affiliate, AFL-CIO affiliate group program at the steelworkers.
There's an AFL-CIO affiliate program called Working America.
Exactly, and that's what we joined because we support unions, and we're not fortunate enough to be able to procure employment in our family at any place that has a union. So. I talked to unions for years asking them to provide affiliate programs for people that are not employed in union jobs so that they can belong to a union and their voices can be heard. And so they heard us, and they have developed these affiliate programs to provide for a voice to be heard. But what I'm saying is, once you get your voice heard, once we form some sort of a group and make our voices known, it goes from here to Washington, D.C., and into the trash can of some senator's office while he goes to the fundraising event and laughs his butt off at us.
Yep, booze and shrimp, booze and shrimp, booze and shrimp. I know.
Exactly. And we're the fools that lets it go on. And there really is no other way to get rid of this rapacious, unlawful, horrendous system but to do one of two things. One is to actively fold your arms, click your wallet closed, sit on your butt and do as little as possible, refuse to participate and say, I don't like the way things go. And, I'm going to rattle their cages. I'm not saying refuse to participate in the process, but refuse to participate in putting money in their pockets. Every time you're going to do something, if that means you're going to go to the store or you're going to buy a subscription or something that's going to put money in their pocket, think twice. And if it gives them profit, don't do it. Find some way to live without profiting them. Cut their profits down as far as you can, the same way they cut our profits down as far as they could. We need to knuckle them under with a lack of money. And that is one weapon that we have. And the other weapon is to absolutely overthrow them. And that's when they pull out their armies and they come after us with bloodlust, and there'll be bodies in the streets. And they won't be theirs, it'll be ours, because they're more heavily armed than us. And that has been the history of any kind of people's movement that tries to come against these oligarchies. And we do not have a democratic republic in America. We have an oligarchy. We have to get real about it. And President Obama is the current leader of the oligarchy. And that's why all of the oligarchs in D.C. are scared to death, because we might figure it out.
I love the way you think, Cindy. I love the way you think. I'm going to roll on. We're almost at the end of tonight's program, but thank you very much for the input. I do so love to hear things said like that.
Okay, thank you, Bob, and you have a good day.
And I'm going to go look up that book. You take care.
Okay, you too.
Bye now.
Bye, Bob.
From the Great Northwest, our pal Cindy. You hear her emails more than you hear her, but it's great to hear from her on the phone. About 5 minutes left in the program. And kind of got to say some stuff. Times, as you know, are hard. I'm sure you are as tired of me pitching for funds for the horn as I am tired of pitching. One of the reasons that I don't have to pitch as hard as I would otherwise have to pitch is because of the people that I mention at the end of the program every night. The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, the folks that I call the hardest working, bravest people I know. They are, in more ways than I can even express. And because of their hard work, they are able to partially sponsor the programs on this network. You do some of it, they do some of it. Without either one, we're done. Without both, we're done. When the market went south, funding for many nonprofit organizations went with it. Usually I pitch for funds for the horn. I'm not doing that tonight. It's a little, I would call it a miracle, except for the respect that I have for the sacrifices and the hard work of the people who contribute to the upkeep of the horn. I'd call it a miracle, but it's not. It's just hard work and dedication on your part. But thanks to that hard work and dedication, here on the 14th day of May, we are actually more than halfway to our monthly goal.
and our monthly goal of $2,000 is modest, and we seldom reach it. And it does not even begin to address the real financial needs of the Horn. Nobody's getting paid still. But times are especially hard at Coal River Mountain Watch. Brutally hard. There is a PayPal button at crmw.net. Let me work through this real quick so there won't be any confusion. crmw.net. There's a PayPal button there. If you look down the left-hand side of the webpage, you will see a button that says Support. That's where the PayPal button is. The address is also there for snail mail, for those who can't or won't or for some other reason don't care to do PayPal. Coal River Mountain Watch, P.O. Box 651, Whitesville, West Virginia, 25209. They need your help. They need your help badly. Because, like I said, without the support that you provide to the Horn, and without the support that Coal River Mountain Watch provides for the Horn, without both of those, there is no Horn. None. And I don't know how long we're going to last. It's a simple fact. We have considerable debt. We have considerable financial obligations. And at the same time, we hope to go places and do things to help grow the network. We don't quit because it's a matter of how we honor and respect you who help keep this going, that we go and we do literally around the clock. And we are never far from going dark. Never far at all. But tonight, I don't ask you to help the Horn. Tonight, I ask you to help Coal River Mountain Watch so that they can in turn say, look, when we sponsor programs on the Horn, people respond by supporting us. That justifies the ongoing support. If the Horn matters, Coal River Mountain Watch matters. It is that simple. I'll never give up. I won't leave this chair till the lights are out. But that day is nearer than what you know, and far too near from what I know. It's as simple as I can put it. So thank you again. Thank you again. Thank you. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know. The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Go to those websites. See what they do. Understand what I mean when I say what I say. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Congressman, this is Bob Kincaid. My sincere apologies. For some reason or another, we lost our connection with Mark Levine. I know he did want to ask, and I hope I'm not my show starts in about 3 minutes, so it's no problem. But I know he did want to move with you briefly to this the political situation in Pennsylvania.
Sure. Absolutely.
And I realize it's probably a rather sensitive area for you. But there are.
I'm happy to address it if there was time, but can we still do it or we won't?
No, we're fine. We're fine.
Right.
There's a lot of talk out there suggesting that you would be an appropriate challenger in the primary for Arlen Specter. Can you address that?
Absolutely. I was disappointed in the Washington political establishment of my party, the Democrats, that they felt they needed to reach over to an individual who'd been in the Republican establishment for about four decades, and then tell us Pennsylvanians, here's your future. I just did not get into politics because I felt that our independent decision-making was going to be taken away by an establishment. So that has moved me more close to getting into this race. But I said, and I will continue to do so, although I haven't been moved away from my concerns, that I will wait to see what Arlen Specter is running for. What is the health care proposal that he believes in? How is he going to fight for the right educational future and opportunity for our children in Pennsylvania? Because they're not staying. And you can see that because Pennsylvania now is up there with Florida as the oldest in average age of the citizens of the state, of the states, of the union. What is he going to do for alternative energy and our environment? And unless those answers are addressed well, and number two, we feel we can rely upon him, not this year only, but in 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16, then I will get into this because I believe that the next few years are so important to my district and to us Pennsylvanians as a whole that we cannot entrust this to someone who we feel we may not be able to rely upon, and number two, has not the right policies for us Pennsylvanians. We're going to decide this. And so that's what I'm working through. Haven't made my final decision yet, but it is something that is too important to let just an establishment, as much as I respect the men who made that decision, and I just feel it isn't theirs. There's no kings and no kingmakers in America. And so we're going to work this through together, us Pennsylvanians.
Well, Congressman, that is, and I am this is not false praise or lightly given. That is an answer that makes me feel a surge of pride, quite frankly, because it mirrors a lot of what I too have thought. May I also raise a couple of other issues that you didn't touch on within the calculus of whether or not you get into the race?
Sure, absolutely.
The first one.
I'll just have to wrap up maybe within the next five, if it's okay.
That's fine. That's fine. I just know that I know this was very important to Mark, and I don't know what happened to him, but it's.
So we'll make the time.
Yeah, we operate through the miracle of modern technology, and sometimes it bites us. Two issues. One of which, one of the issues that the Horn, the network that you're on right now, is the single most the unwavering voice for working people broadcast-wise in the United States.
Yes.
Senator Specter came out and said that in no wise would he support the Employee Free Choice Act.
Right.
Can you address that topic?
Yes, the Employee Free Choice Act is one that I have co-sponsored. I actually voted for it in the last election, Congress, and it comes out of my committee. The issue is that the National Relations, NRLB, National Relations Labor Board, is broken. And there's not the proper enforcement of the right of workers to unionize. Now, people may agree or disagree on that, but the fact of the matter is they have the right to unionize by law. So what you find is that approximately 60% of those that want to have a secret ballot never get there because there is of groups that try to organize, because in 60% of the cases there are actual firings or pressure placed upon those who are trying to organize by employers. Second is what you have is that after they get to the right, to after they've won a secret ballot, about 40% of those unions that have groups that have voted for union never get to a contract. And so this bill was supposed to make the field much more fair. And so that's the issue here, is that it's not really about labor. It's about working families. And the reason I'm concerned about working families is in my district and all of Pennsylvania, 50% of the families, working families, the median level of the income of our state means that you, when you look at statistics, they are earning less today in real income than they did in 2001. That's not just today, 2009, after a recession of a year, 14 months. It was even 14 months ago before the recession began that they were losing less in earning less in real terms. With health premiums up 100% in that period of time, the cost of public university education up 60% during that time. And you sit back and say, well, wait a moment. The great American dream that the next generation will have the opportunity, not the requirement, but the promise, but the opportunity to do better than their father and mother hasn't been met. And we need to address this issue. And this is a piece of it. There's so much more to be done, from healthcare to educational opportunity. But this is a piece of the future.
Well, I believe a week and a half ago, I spoke with a wonderful radio host in your state, a gentleman by the name of Rick Smith, out of Harrisburg, and he was talking about the fact that organized labor would effectively have no voice if Arlen Specter were elected Senate. And we had an extended discussion about the fact that working people